Hello?
Oh, I thought you had this or that going in the background.
No, it is no game. It's not a game episode. Sorry.
Ah, what's going on back there?
Oh, everything and anything's going on back there.
I believe it.
Yeah, you know how it is.
I believe it. Are you watching Westworld? Is that what it is?
I've never seen Westworld.
What?
No.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
Have you ever seen the old movie?
The Yul Brynner movie? Yes, I've seen that.
Ah, okay, good.
Yeah, I do want to see it. I just, especially with Aaron Paul on the new season, but mm-hmm. No, I haven't.
I have not watched the new season yet, but it's a great show.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's very good.
I heard season two had its ups and downs.
Season two is great. You know what the problem is? People are stupid.
People want the same exact thing over and over again.
People don't understand the intricate philosophy of Westworld.
Well, yeah. I mean,
that's the problem.
If there is an intricate philosophy, I would think that some of that would be lost on people.
Yes. People like The Shiny, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
People like mm-hmm. The Shiny. It's like, what was that show that I liked? True Detective. I was surprised people like True Detective.
Same here.
Because True Detective is very philosophical.
Yeah, it's interesting. I did fall off season two, though, but season three looks good.
I don't know. I watched the first episode of two, and I haven't gone back. Not because I didn't want to, just because life.
You should go back. Let Westworld build up a little bit. Build up in episodes.
Time is infinite, you know what I mean? I don't care. It's fine.
That's true.
I'll get to it at some point.
Is it flat or is it a circle? We don't know.
Yes.
Could it be both? Possibly.
Of course. Could it be neither?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, sure.
But,
who are we to ask these questions?
Who are we to ask these questions, Nick?
Yeah.
We are Nick and Martin of the Nerdy Legion podcast. Where's my bell? Oh, shit. Did I move it? There it is.
So professional.
Yeah, see?
I like that transition.
On the ball.
So tell me, I don't mean to direct the conversation, but I'm going to direct the conversation to where I want some Martin time. And then... Oh, actually, before that, do you mind if I do a little tangent?
You do whatever you want, buddy. It's your show.
Thank you. I'm doing a Death of Wolverine read-through.
I've been seeing that.
I know. Dude, and we talked about Death of Wolverine. I guess it's an omnibus. It's like 500 pages. Why wouldn't they call that an omnibus? I don't know. But it's more than just the miniseries. It has a lot of, like, tie-ins. And we discussed this before. It was just like... There is no meat on those bones. What the hell are they? And in my head, I was like, mother effer. Mm. I'm already pot committed. So now I have to read The Death of Wolverine Companion, which is another omnibus, like 500 pages. And then I have to read the 5-issue Return of Wolverine. And I'm like,
of course.
I don't even know if I can. It was just one of those things, just like, oh my God, the amount of issues that I have to read to get through. And starting off without a bang whatsoever was just like, oh, I was not inspired to try to read that whatsoever.
Mm.
So then I'm almost through the compendium, the companion, almost through that. And I'm like, at least I only have 5 more issues, right? Return of Wolverine, 5 issues. That's it. And it has Steve McNiven art. Don't get me wrong. Charles Soule, like him too. But there wasn't a lot. There was no hat rack to hang the hat on. There was nothing there. It was a skeleton.
Sure.
So I'm almost right. But the companion omnibus, I did a complete 180 on. I freaking loved the Wolverines. And I can't believe that little group only went 20 issues. Mm. The Wolverines is really good. Now, could that be Ray Falk talking to Charles Soule, since those two are both the writers of the Wolverines? Possibly. Like, the art was okay at times. You know, it was hit or miss. There were tons of different artists. It was ups and downs for me, style-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But the writing throughout the entire thing, it head and shoulders above trying to deal with all of the scientists' offshoot experiment people. And trying to build them into their own mutant supergroup, which I was like, what the hell is this? But as soon as they introduced them trapping X-23, Sabretooth, Rogue, I mean not Rogue, Mystique. As soon as they started to do that, I got really invested in the Wolverines. I really freaking liked it. At the end, I was like, this can't be over. Come on. And I went to dumb Wikipedia and they're like 20 issues. And I'm like, son of a bee. It was really, really good. But then again, I like Mystique. And this was the first time I actually liked Lady Deathstrike.
Because
you read the Wolverines, right?
Yes, yes, yes. That's so funny. Okay. I just read a book with Lady Deathstrike in it. We'll talk about that later. Keep going.
Okay. I just want to get this out before I ask you your question.
Yeah.
But dude, the romance of Lady Deathstrike to Ogun and Shogun, who Ogun is the spirit that went into Shogun and is pushed. So it's almost like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, or as one of my spotlight characters, Bruce Banner and the Hulk type situation being pushed down personalities. And Lady Deathstrike discovering that, like, in issue 14. Like, it took so long. If I was reading that by issues and it took over a year to get to that point, I would have been like, holy cow, that was a slow burn. But it was good. It was real good. But, like, I even tweeted, I enjoyed the A storyline of them trying to find Wolverine. I enjoyed the B storyline of that mutant group that supposedly has powers over Lady Deathstrike, and because they're holding all of these terms that the doctor put into them as like kill codes, or they can just flip by a term, they can flip a switch on the person and have them like just overload and pass out. So they sort of had a leash on them, even though you knew with Mystique, she's 20 steps ahead of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But this, even the C storyline, throughout the entire 20 issues of Mystique trying to bring back Destiny, her lover. And I was like, because one, I freaking loved Destiny way back in the day. Freaking loved her. Didn't even know she was gone. I was like, what? Is this why I haven't seen her in so long? She was kick-ass. And to think that she's going to be brought back because, as Destiny, she can see into the future. And the death of Wolverine was a seminal point that was not going to be changing in any timeline. That is a fixed point. So from that point forward, Mystique had to do XYZ to try to bring back her lover. And I was like, that is so cool. And like I said, it was a C storyline, barely any page time put towards it. But then they went to, spoiler alert, sorry, Gundy, the last like two issues, she hooked up with somebody who could transport her through space and time. And she was going to do something for him. And what he had to do was take her to the Nexus. I think it was called the Nexus of Infinite Realities. And that was protected by Man-Thing, who was on the freaking last page of like the second to the last issue. And I was like, oh my God, the Nexus. I mean, that was such a great term. And then for it to be Man-Thing. And it was just like, oh, this is so good. I was so in, like, this doesn't have to end. This really did not have to end. Don't know if it was popular. I have no clue. But it was so fun. So it was the complete opposite of what the first volume was. So I was wrapping that up and I'm like, okay, I see the light. I only have 5 issues left of The Return of Wolverine. Fantastic. So I started that, and I'm sort of itching for, like, well, what else do I want? Since I got rid of 2 omnibuses, I have space on my tablet. What can I put on there? And I typed in Wolverine, because I'm like, maybe I want to go back. I have an itch for a little bit more Wolverine, but, you know, maybe told by Larry Hama. I don't know. Whatever strikes my fancy. So I type in Wolverine. For all of the comics that I have purchased on that is in my cloud that I can pull down, mm-hmm. Not on Marvel Unlimited. This is all Comixology. So I do that, mother effer. I have, and I completely forgot, I have The Hunt for Mother Effin' Wolverine. Another 500 page thing. I'm like, are you kidding? Pull me right back in. Oh, so I had to start that. So I stopped the Return of Wolverine, because the Hunt for Wolverine comes before that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when somebody steals Wolverine out of his Antian shell.
Yep.
So that's what I'm on the hunt for Wolverine now. Which I gotta say before, sorry to interrupt, the thing I was reading before this was New Mutants.
Ah. Fantastic. Which one?
The first 56 issues.
Okay. The Sienkiewicz stuff?
Oh, God, yeah. Hell yeah. But the last time I read the Sienkiewicz stuff was when it originally was coming out. So that's how long it's been.
Dang.
And, like, I didn't even realize I like Magma. I liked Cypher, which before it was all, you know, Sunspot, Cannonball, like, you know, the big people. Rereading it, I loved all the B-list characters. Give me more of all of that. I, of course, other than Peter's sister, Magic, other than her, because I liked her originally, she was a mainstay even in this one. But I sort of dug Cypher. I dug, you know, Magma especially. But now I'm reading Hunt for Wolverine, and I think they had one of the four-issue arcs in there that I'm currently reading is Weapon Lost. I don't know if you read that four issues.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Daredevil, Misty Knight, and an Inhuman who used to be a detective, and now he has, like, lights for eyes. God, I can't even remember the guy's name. I just started it. But the person that they were searching, because they're on the hunt for Wolverine, the person that they go to, who is in this freaking, it looks like a crack den, but it's his own house, but it looks, I mean, it is dilapidated, is Cypher. So It's Cypher with this long-ass beard, and he hasn't eaten in days. He looks completely strung out because he's trying to uncode the internet, the entire internet. Like, that's what his day-to-day living is. It was so like, oh my God, this is really good.
Who writes that?
Oh, God. And me without my iPad. I'll get that for you right now.
Let me see if I can look it up real quick. Weapon Lost. That is not a very searchable term.
But it was really clever, and the art is great. I actually took a screenshot, which I'm grabbing right now, of the table of contents, because I knew...
Oh, okay,
I
would... it's Char Soule. Yeah, okay.
There you go.
And Matteo Bufani is the artist.
Yeah.
The reason I ask is because when I was doing my Daredevil read-through, the guy that you're talking about, Frank, he shows up in that run, in the Char Soule run.
Oh, because,
yeah, there's a serial killer who kills some Inhumans.
Oh,
and okay. So the Inhumans send Frank, and because Frank's the head of security for the Inhumans.
Yes.
So they send him to check out the scene, and Daredevil's investigating.
Interesting.
Yeah, and there... I think that might be before this, before Hunt for Wolverine.
Very cool. It was, and I like Frank right off the bat. He definitely has this hard-boiled detective attitude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now I have to go and read Charles Soule's run on Daredevil for sure, because Daredevil asks him to do this before telling him it's Wolverine. Asks mm-hmm. him, hey, can you handle this case? And he goes, well, I'm in charge of taking care of, you know, Inhuman territories.
Yep.
And then he goes, well, it's for a mutant. And he's like, well, we're, you know, there's a peace accord, but we don't really play nice. And then he says, oh, but it's Wolverine. And he goes, Atlantan is a very small area. Yeah, I have time. Just like instantly like, I'll do that. It's really, it's a good series, dude. And the artist definitely harkens back. And maybe it's the colorist as well, but it has a Michael Lark feel to it. It reminded me a lot of like Gotham Central.
That's cool.
Yeah. So don't sleep on those four issues. It had Cypher, dude. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's
so
cool.
Good. Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. Cause I did like that guy, Frank.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty by the book.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. But he doesn't mind bending the rules a little bit. It's weird.
Him and Misty Knight have a good relationship since they both were detectives. So that's a cool little thing right there.
Nice. We have some minor crossover going on. Very minor. And I might be going down some rabbit holes.
Oh, I like this.
Because I started rereading Remender's Uncanny X-Force. And let me tell you, those first four issues, freaking fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, everyone knows I hate Deadpool.
This is Ditto.
The best Deadpool story ever.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? Like, he's funny, but he's not over the top.
But he also moves the story along. It's not just comic relief.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but yes. Yeah, so
is that a Kuna?
The what?
Is that a Kuna who does the art?
Opeña.
Opeña. There you go. Yeah.
Opeña does the first arc, and then Isad Ribic does the second one, and then it's Billy Tan.
Yeah, it's so solid.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
But, so I read that, and I was like, man, this is freaking awesome. I'm just going to go ahead and keep going with the series.
Yeah.
And so I started reading the second arc, mm-hmm. Which is entitled Deathlock Nation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's my favorite one.
Is it?
Yeah. I freaking love Deathlock.
It's
and
great,
that's what's weird. I love modern Deathlock, and I love modern Cable.
Mm.
But I didn't like them when they originally... Well, no, I take that back. I've always liked Deathlock. But modern Cable just never got to me until Straczynski with the, like, almost like a Terminator 2 Lone Wolf Cub feel he put there. Yeah. But ever since then. Oh, so good.
I subscribe to the Deathlock series by mail.
Nice.
It's awesome.
Oh, and they had good creative teams throughout.
Yeah, they sure did.
Yeah.
I sure did. Ooh. So I don't know. I might go down a rabbit hole and maybe pick up Deathlock as an adopted character.
Yeah.
Because, dude, it's been so long since I read any Deathlock. And this series is awesome. Here's the problem, right? My concern is I'm liking this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try to be like, you know what? Let me try to expand my horizons. Mm-hmm. Right? Maybe I'll read some Deadpool. Maybe I'll read some Deathlock. And then I go and read those books and they're just garbage.
In my compendium read, there was one issue that revolved around Deadpool buying all this Wolverine gear
mm-hmm.
and then attaching like knives to his hands, putting on Wolverine's outfit. I won't even say it was comically ridiculous. It was completely eye rolling for me. thank God, because he wanted to go after the Hulk,
uh-huh.
just like original Wolverine did. Right. But since Hulk was off planet, he went after Jen Walters instead.
Mm.
And the dialogue with She-Hulk was the only thing that actually kept that book moving for me. I almost stopped reading at that point, which would have been a shame. It would have been before the Wolverines.
Mm.
But God, he is terrible. Oh,
he is terrible.
I just don't care for him whatsoever.
But anyway, so Lady Deathstrike shows up in this arc
mm-hmm.
because she was part of the Weapon Project, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's like a whole big thing going on between all the weapons because, what's his name? Phantom X is in this book and he's part of the Weapon Plus program. So like he's involved. And I think, you know, I might go down a Phantom X rabbit hole a little bit as well.
Ooh.
Because I haven't read, what was it, New X-Men that Grant Morrison did? I haven't read that in forever, since it came out.
Okay.
So maybe I'll read that.
Maybe you just need to go down a mutant rabbit hole.
I think I need to. Because after this arc is over, I think there's like a solo issue. And then it's part of the Dark Phoenix saga.
Mm.
So maybe I just need to do like a whole just X-Men thing for a while.
Just enjoy those mutants a little bit. What the heck?
Yeah. But the thing is, some of the stuff in this book is kind of like a blind side for me. Because this is the era where, like, this is the only X book that I was reading.
Mm.
Because the rest of them weren't that good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, man, I don't know. If I do this, I'm going to have to read a lot of X books. And I don't know if that's a rabbit hole I want to go down. You know what I mean? Because when you do that, you end up reading all the X books.
Yeah, because they're all intertwined with each other.
Yep.
And there's a lot of gray land there that, Yeah,
I hear you. So we'll see. But Uncanny X-Force is awesome.
That is. It was because it was its own pocket universe.
Yep.
It didn't include itself in anything.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. Maybe you just need to do a Remender rabbit hole. Maybe that's what you need.
Me, maybe.
Yeah.
Was he writing any other X-Books?
I don't believe so. Because didn't he jump over to, what the hell was it, Avengers? And then he went over to Captain America? Yeah, the Captain America. Even for me, a JRJR huge fan, even that was like, I don't even know what's going on. This is too much time displacement. What the hell?
Wait, can you spell that again for me? What would you say?
Did I cut out? Sorry.
What? Excuse me? What were those four letters in there? I missed that totally. Sorry. Maybe next
but
time.
But I might go back and read Enemy of the State, speaking of Wolverine offshoots. So.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Maybe I'll try to read some JRJR.
Hey, don't twist your arm too much,
buddy. Surely there's something JRJR that I will like. You're a JRJR fan. Recommend me something that JRJR did. Then I'll be like, I was wrong. This is pretty good.
His run with Roger Stern on Amazing Spider-Man.
All right, Roger Stern, Amazing Spider-Man.
Yep.
Okay.
Those are all pretty key run, as well as like the Madam Web Juggernaut. That was a good 3-4 issues. He had a lot of good stuff there.
All right. Well, I can't buy this hardcover because it's $403, and that's
holy Christ! It ain't $400. Good.
Must be out of print. Don't do that. Wow. Just go to Comixology. See, this is why I just end up going to Comixology.
Yeah.
Because hardcovers go out of print, and I'm not spending $400 on them.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Roger, let's try this again. Roger Stern. Let's see if Comixology has a good search. We all know it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so that's terrible.
You've already answered that question.
Okay, so what I need to do then is go to Amazon, figure out the issues, and then go to Comixology and find those issues.
That seems easy, doesn't it?
Yes, let's just do that. Listen, doesn't Amazon own Comixology? Can't we do something about this?
Well, can I give you a recommendation?
Yes.
Because it's on Unlimited for free.
Oh.
It's right around issue 230. When you see the cover of 230, you'll recognize it. But it says Unlimited, so you'll be able to read it for free.
Amazing Spider-Man.
Yep. You'll certainly recognize that cover. There's no way you wouldn't.
Well, let me make sure I have the correct series here. Because, you know, they like to redo this a lot.
Yeah, it's the 63 through 98.
Oh, God. All right. This is terrible. You said 230?
Yep. Just put in Amazing Spider-Man 230, son. Come on.
All right, fine. Try that.
There's a search bar. You can use it.
Listen,
I have faith.
It's not that smart. Let's find out here. 230. It's not that smart. Oh, here it is. Okay. 63 to 98. Is that the right series? Yes. John Romita Jr. Okay, fantastic. Yes, I do recognize this cover.
Yeah, I thought you would.
Mm-hmm.
But that little run right there, actually, the beginning of Stern's run is right around there. So there's just some real good issues right there.
All right, riddle me this, Batman.
Uh-oh.
Okay, I do like this JRJR art, because this looks like his dad's art.
Mm-hmm. And in Amazing Spider-Man, he was inked a few issues. His father did ink him.
Hmm.
But go to 229. I think that's where it starts, is 229. 230 is the second part. But anywhere around there.
29. Very good. Yes.
Yeah.
John Romita Jr. Yep.
But any of Stern's... That's pretty stellar.
See, if JRJR still did art like this, I would read that.
I know.
I like
it. I understand.
This is nice.
I get it. I understand.
What happened?
I don't agree with you, but hey, to each their own.
Okay, maybe I'm going to put this in my queue. Matter of fact, I'm just going to buy this right now.
Buy it? It's free. Amazon or Comixology Unlimited. Don't be buying nothing, fool. That's why it's free.
Yeah, but their search sucks.
You just stop the madness.
How do I... 230... this is so terrible. People listening are like, what's happening to this show? Alright, okay. These are all Unlimited. Okay, cool. Alright, fine, no problem.
I mean, some of them are not JRJR.
Yeah, that's fine.
Back before, but you can get a taste for Roger Stern. And
252, that's a classic cover. Who's that? Love Ron that Frenz.
Oh, it's a goodie.
252, great cover. Okay, so I'm going to read 229 and 230. Okay?
Yeah. All right. There's some classic stuff there.
I will do that. Oh, the Epic Collection is on here. That's old stuff, though. Okay, fine.
I mean, when I was a young lad, the cover of 244 Amazing Spider-Man, that was ingrained in my head. That was, I think that's how I fell in love with, like, JRJR.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. Because there was just so much, like, energy to it.
See, dude, look, I just borrowed the Masterworks, and it's got John Romita Sr. It looks just like it. The only difference is the colors.
You just can't, yeah. Believe me, I wish he still looked like his dad. I'm not arguing that, but you know, everyone's style changes.
Alright, how about this? What about current JRJR style? Is there a book that I should read and be like, man, Nick was right?
See, I loved any transition from him. That's like comparing Mike Mignola Rocket Raccoon miniseries to Hellboy. Like, no, those are completely different.
Well, the difference being that the Hellboy shit is incredible and is obviously better.
Right.
Whereas the Romita Jr. stuff, I would say the early stuff is better.
Well, hey, I like some of the hatchiness to him. But, I mean, it helps when he has, like, Klaus Janson, you know, behind him. That does help.
I like when he did, oh, shit. What's the name of that book? The Mark Miller book that they made into a movie.
Oh, I want to say Wanted, but I know that's not
not Wanted. The one with the kids.
Yes, and I can see it. It's in my head. I see the cover.
What's that? Hit Girl's in it. Wait, Romita did Hit Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Kick-Ass, that's it. Didn't Romita do Kick-Ass?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, that's modern.
And that's the scratchy stuff.
Yeah, that's modern. You just don't want the scratchy stuff on your characters, that's all. You don't want him venturing off into Batman and Moon Knight. I get it.
Oh, no, definitely not. Like, when he did Avengers, like, I kind of like that.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I'm a big fan. He did Thor. I loved his run on Thor. I like the big blockiness that he brings. I do. And I understand that a lot of people don't. They feel like it's stagnant, that, you know, it's not as energetic. Mm. But I like it.
Sure.
Yeah.
We'll go with that.
Yeah.
John Romita Jr. I know he's got a lot of fans. Listen, I'm not knocking on the guy. You know what I mean? He's a famous comic book artist.
That's true.
Okay? He knows more about comics than I do. Okay?
It helps. It helps when you come from that lineage, though.
He just has terrible art.
Sure.
I have terrible opinions on comics. He draws terrible art. What is wrong with that? We all have our failings.
Joe Kubrick had sons as well, and they certainly don't look like Joe Kubrick. So
this is true. Yeah. I like Andy, though.
Hey, you look at their art in the 90s compared to current stuff, the huge transitions.
Mm. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because some of that mutant work is, oh my. But that's the way it was done back in the day.
Yes, that's true. You know what? That's why I like this Spider-Man art. It's because that was the Marvel way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now he does it the JRJR way.
Right. People want it that way.
That could be the episode title. I don't want it that way, as NSYNC used to say. Was it NSYNC or Backstreet Boys? One of those two.
Yeah, I think it's Backstreet Boys.
Listen, the listeners know. They pretend like they don't know, but I know deep down inside they're like, you mother effer, that was the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, listen, don't you ever say that again.
I'm not going to judge you. Okay, if you like boy bands, that's cool. Listen, I used to sing Bye 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 karaoke.
Of course you did. With the hop and then the hand movement?
Dude, there were three of us.
Oh, no.
And we used to sing it as a group karaoke, but only when our ex-girlfriends were at the bar.
Did you do the hop with the hand movement?
Of course we did.
Oh, awesome.
Look at my name tag. What does it say? Martin Ferretti, mother effer.
That's the episode title. My name tag. All right,
I gotta write that down because I'll forget.
That's a good one.
Oh man. Anyways, what else have you been up to? How's the new gig?
The new gig is fantastic. I gotta tell you, it's great to be back. My first content management system I was ever in was Sitecore. Mm-hmm. And then I went off to and did like multiple different content management systems. But man, to come back to Sitecore and to remember some of the failings of Sitecore and see that they never improved. I'm just like, oh my God. That still is not an elegant solution. But for it to come back to me to know like, oh yeah, that happened to me when I was on that system a half a decade ago and they still never had that down. That was mm-hmm. very reassuring, but I actually missed Sitecore a little bit. Like it was sort of nice to get back into it. So like I told you before, this is a 3-month gig, contracted 3-month gig, but it feels like a comfy sweater that I'm coming back into. So that's really exciting for me.
Interesting.
Yeah. And my boss is really good. It certainly does not feel like he's going to overmanage me, nor does he want to have ridiculous long meetings for that they don't have a point at all. Mm. The point of any meeting for him, and I've heard it multiple times, is to other people, is there any blockers? Do you have any hurdles? Is there anything going on that I can help you guys out with or that you need to speak to? Which is very refreshing for somebody who is not in management to hear a manager say to the underlings.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. So all good. Dude, it's been great. First week down, ready for the second week. I'm actually excited to go into it.
Very good. I like it. My wife is not having such a good time with her content management system.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I'm not going to name company names. Because no, they don't but sponsor what's the show. System? Sitecore, if you want to sponsor us, hello@nerdlegion.com. I actually looked at Sitecore once before because we had a competing product.
Sure.
Anyway, so I am familiar with Sitecore. Anyway.
But just like any CMS, the chance of any person or any company using more than 30%, 40% of the package is so in the minority.
Mm-hmm. This is actually exactly how the conversation started the other day. Oh. Because I came from work for lunch, and you know my wife's working from home.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm having lunch in the kitchen, and she's set up in what is technically the dining room that we never use, so it's her office now.
Sure.
And she's complaining about this report she's got to run, and she explains the whole thing to me, and I'm like, that doesn't make any sense.
Huh.
Right? And she's like, yeah, come look at it. So she goes over there, and she goes through the whole process of creating this report for her work. And and I'm like, okay, like that's pretty straightforward. She's like, yeah, but if I don't do this or this or this, then like it doesn't do exactly what I need. I have to do this every single time. And I'm like, why don't you just create a template? She's like, you can't make a template.
Wow.
I said, what do you mean you can't make a template for a report? She's like, I was on the phone with this company for an hour and a half this morning. And finally, I'm like, can I just make a template? And they're like, no, the software doesn't do that. Wow. And I'm like, what kind of company are you guys using that you can't make a template for a financial report?
Wow.
You know what I mean? And I look again as she's going through how to make this report. And it's like tied directly into the bank account. So like this is the software the bank is using.
Well, I've dealt with some CMSs back in the day, not even back in the day, very recently, that is very similar to that. Like the CMS will not allow you to clone a page and just fill in the blanks and alter things. Mm-hmm. They just will not let you do that. Mm-hmm. And granted, that version of CMS of the CMS was 5 versions old. So maybe the new version of the CMS is up to date and we'll let you do so, but it's like, yeah, that, oh, I feel bad for your wife. Holy Christ. Cause you know, she probably runs that report every week or every month. So it's like, well, why wouldn't you as a company want that functionality and tell the other company, look, I don't care what it takes, like get it together and create this functionality because we need this every month.
Listen, they need this report every week.
There you go.
Okay, and not only do they need it every week, they need it every week for every franchise.
So why wouldn't they strong arm the CMS to be like, look, you need to create this?
Well, so my reply was,
that's insane.
Well, you can use this product, which I've worked on, which I hate, by the way. I fucking hate it. I think it's terrible. It's a terrible product.
Gotcha.
And I'm not going to say the name of it.
No.
Because they pay my bills. Right. But I think it's a terrible product. And I mean, it does. Here's the thing. It does a lot. But and to go to your point, it does too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It does so much that like 0.001% of people use everything that it does. Right. But it literally does everything. Right. Like that's... if she wants to do payroll reports, she can do payroll reports. She wants to do the banking stuff, she can do the banking stuff. Like it does everything. You can save your templates. You can do whatever you choose, categories, whatever you want.
Yeah, it creates all that just so you can go into a new business and be like, look at all this stuff we can do. Yeah, we have a solution for you.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing no one's ever going to use all that stuff. But look, they're all bullet points right here.
Dude, but I hate it so much. Like they purposely designed it so like it looks like you're working on a spreadsheet, even though it's not a spreadsheet. They designed it that way because people will be familiar with it.
Jesus.
And it's just awful.
Terrible.
Awful. It's like I'm working in 1985. You know what I mean? With like modern technology. It's awful.
Unreal.
But I mean, it works.
Sure. It does what it's supposed to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the thing is, too, that it all runs on a SQL backend. Microsoft mm-hmm. SQL. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you want, you can even drop down within the application and do, like, SQL queries directly from there.
Ah.
Right? But, like, how many people know SQL? You know what I mean?
Of course.
Like, you think a typical business owner knows SQL?
No. They'll ask you, can you hook up, can you show me all that information through Flash? Like, that's what they're at that point. You're like, Flash? Get out of here.
Mm-hmm. But the cool thing is like you can remote in and like drop down and do a SQL query right there and then like oh it you did some magic stuff.
Can I tell you what is a weird blanket for me regarding this new 3-month thing?
Mm.
They sent me a laptop
nice.
So I can work. Which hey, guess what? They wanted me to use my own laptop and I'm like, how much stuff are you going to be running in the back end? Not that I'm paranoid enough to be like they're going to break into my bank account. But I don't want you going through any of my personal stuff. So I'm like, no, send me a laptop. Didn't preface which one, which I guess I should have. So it's been at least 6 years, but I'm back on a Windows machine.
Mm.
And it's really strange.
Yikes.
I'm like, oh, let me minimize that window on the left-hand side. Nope, that's on the right-hand side. Okay, let me go over to the right-hand side.
Yikes.
But I will say it's sort of cool to hear all these window updates through the years that I've never been able to experience. And now it's like, oh, look, all these tiles. Oh, look, now they have, you know, whatever it is, Teams. And it's like all this stuff that everyone's so like up to date, ready to go. And it's like that was just non-existent. I haven't had that in 5 years, 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
But to actually see it running, I'm like, yeah, Microsoft sort of. They have some of their S together, which is sort of nice.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they've gotten better.
Compared to Apple. I mean, Apple's great, but using it for a business and not being a designer or somebody that, you know, works in a visual medium, I think Windows is a hell of a lot easier
mm-hmm.
for me.
See, I don't use Windows. I refuse.
I know. But you also don't use a Mac, so.
I don't use a Mac. And right. I mean, I would use a Mac if they just weren't overpriced. You know what I mean?
Oh, that they are.
Because I can build something more powerful for a third of the price.
Sure.
I can build a Hackintosh for a third of the price and put Mac OS on it. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't touch Windows.
Yeah, I'm back on it. It's just interesting to see the upgrade since the new. Since everything's a little bit more bright and shiny and new systems now,
ooh,
6 years later.
Did your laptop come preloaded with Candy Crush Saga?
It did not, but of course it was loaded up with every system, internal system that they need me to learn. Let's go.
No doubt.
Yeah. So
that's the one thing I always hated. I mean, that's why you always have to take a work laptop. Just like the mandatory VPN thing, for example. Like I have my own, you know what I mean? Like, don't put your shit on my computer.
Right. Amen.
Yeah.
Nor do I want to be running all of their, like, at this point, it's like, can I charge you for, now that I'm working from home, can I charge you for using my internet at this point? Like, come on.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I told my boss that I was going to request for them to start paying my phone bill because he texts me so much, and now he quit texting me.
Nice. Nice. Perfect solution.
I was like, shit, if I had known this, I would have done this years ago.
Oh, hilarious. So good.
Oh, man. But anyway, no, that's good, man. That's good to hear. I'm glad you're enjoying it so far.
Yeah, it definitely has me a lot more jazzed about it, as well as there isn't a constant stress, which is nice.
Yeah. No, that's good. Very good. I have not had any special stories for work lately. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I know people but love hearing my work stories.
I certainly love hearing your work stories. Mm-hmm. But I want to jump over to the YouTube link that you sent me about the TED Talk.
Oh, yes.
Please have some Martin minutes right now, because I want to hear your two cents regarding this TED Talk you sent me.
Well, let me just briefly explain this TED Talk.
Yes, you're going to have to.
Yes. And it was recommended to me by the recommendation engine. I don't know how that works. And I usually don't watch TED Talk. Well, let me rephrase. I don't watch a lot of TED Talk videos. I do watch some. I have some moral apprehension to TED. Because generally, if there's a talk that TED doesn't necessarily agree with, they end up discarding it. Okay, like they put a disclaimer on their website, or they just get rid of it from their YouTube page, and it goes on like the TEDx page.
Wow.
So I don't like that.
Yeah, because that's not good.
I think if you're doing legitimate science, right, which I think this guy is, you should be allowed to voice that opinion, right? Like, this is not like Ancient Aliens, right? We're like, oh yeah, like we can't build pyramids and whatever in 3 days, so it was aliens. Like, whatever, maybe it was aliens, but like maybe they figured it out, you know what I mean?
He was angling there for a while.
No,
just I didn't know where he was gonna go.
Okay, like, I see what is he...
like all of the build-up and explanation in my head, I'm like, and I'm watching it with Julie, the cruise director, in my head I'm like, if he switches over and all of a sudden it's alien pilgrims landing up, building all of these monuments and stuff, I'm like, oh god, I just wasted 20 minutes of the cruise director's time.
But if it was there, I wouldn't have sent it to you.
Exactly. But I mean, in Martin I trust, because all of a sudden, right when I was worried about that and that thought honestly popped into my head, 2 minutes later he went into his science. Mm-hmm. Regarding what I need you to catch the listener up to. As soon as he went into the science, both of us were completely glued to the screen. It was fascinating.
So if I remember, I'll put this video in the show notes so people can watch it. But so I started playing it, right? And I said this to you when I sent you the tweet, to skip the first 9 minutes. Because the first 9 minutes is like introduction into what he's about to say. Right. But like, you need to have some basic science background to understand the point he wants to make. And basically the point of this video is, you know, number one, don't count out ancient people just because they lived a long time ago. OK, they might have been smarter than you think. And number two, like, maybe there's certain things about the way ancient people live their lives that we should take a closer look at, because it may have more meaning than we anticipate, okay? So he starts talking about, like, orbits of planets and moons and magnetic fields. He talks about the ecliptic and, like, spin-axis rotations of planets and things like that. And he goes to the moon and explains, like, how the moon rotates around the Earth and the dark side of the moon, why that's on the other end, and how eclipses work and all this, in order to make the point that all like the really famous archaeological sites around the world are all basically in a straight line, okay? And this straight line coincides with the rotation of the moon around the Earth's ecliptic, okay? Basically, the ecliptic is like obviously the line where you would have an eclipse, okay? But there is like a certain parallel around the Earth where like the moon never rotates around the Earth in that direction. And like this, the Earth doesn't rotate around the sun in that direction. And so this midway point between these two parallels is the straight line where like all these temples are around the world. And it's everywhere, right? Like from Central America to Middle East and Egypt and down into Southeast Asia and all that. And at first, like, it took me a second because, like, when you think about the layout of the planet, even though you know that the Earth is round, sorry, flat Earth people, you don't, like, have it in your head the way it's actually laid out, right? Because when you're taught about the planet in school, you see a flat map, right? And that flat map is not at all accurate. And I don't, have you ever looked into, like, alternate ways of creating maps?
No.
Okay. If you ever want to go down a fascinating rabbit hole, Nick, look up alternate map making like techniques.
Okay.
Because there's been a big push. There's one particular map projection in particular. There's been a big push to move to that one because it more accurately depicts like how land masses are distributed among the planet. If you were to put it in a flat line or in a flat plane like a map, the problem with the map that we use now is it doesn't have that. Like the size of the continents don't match up to the actual size on the planet, in particular in relationship between different continents. So like Europe is tiny, but if you look at it on a map, like it looks kind of big. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
But like if you actually looked at it in the globe, it's like a little tiny piece, like a third of the United States, right? Uh-huh. But on the globe, because like we're so Eurocentric, it's in the middle of the map and it's this big thing. Where in reality it's tiny. And like Africa is much bigger than what's shown on the globe, for example. So there's some really interesting things about like the way they do map projections. And there's like a ton of different ways of doing it. None of them are perfect because you're still trying to put a three-dimensional object in a 2D plane. But the theories on this are really interesting. In fact, there was a what was that show? The West Wing. There's a West Wing episode where they went through this exact argument. Matter of fact, that's probably the easiest way to learn about this is just look up that West Wing map projection clip. It's like 3 or 4 minutes long.
Oh, neat.
Anyway, so this guy starts going through it, and I'm thinking, like, these things don't line up in a straight line. But then, of course, I remember how the map kind of messes up where things are in the actual globe. And
The line looks like a Pringle.
Yes, the line looks like a Pringle because it's a globe. And so right. When you move in a straight line in a globe, you're actually curving.
Right.
Because the globe is curved. And so he starts going through this Pringle line. And like all these places are matching up, like I said, Southeast Asia, and you go to India, and you know the pyramids in Egypt, and the pyramids in Central America, and all that. And it was awesome. And this is something that we had kind of briefly touched upon, I don't know, a couple months ago, I guess, when I posed the question about like, what if ancient people were smarter than we think, right? And we went through this whole argument about like, well, there's a lot of dumb people now, and this, that, and the other. But I shared the video with you because I really liked this guy's approach to the whole thing, where I think I follow a lot of the stuff very closely and I find all of it really interesting, but there are always those people that tend to over sensationalize things, and make possible alternate theories seem like just crackpot things. Whereas this guy is like a legit scientist with legit data that he's showing, and he's trying to make a point where like, hey, what if? And I thought that was really interesting. So tell me what you and Julie thought.
It was up at, when he's discussing the line, that was the part where it popped into my head. Oh my God, he's going to go into Alien Travelers. I know he is. Cause here's the line. So why wouldn't they just move on that line and they're building like formations? And, you know, his examples of formations in Chile compared to, you know, Europe was fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know about all of those gigantic stone blocks being perfectly, like, you couldn't even put a piece of paper in between these ancient stone blocks because they're so well made. Like, that type of stuff was, it was like it was fireworks in my imagination and brain.
Yeah.
Like, it was seizing my logic receptors in my head, but in a good way, because he was backing it up with science as well as he was, like, proposing the what if question, but also why aren't we as a society following up and asking what if and getting money behind it and trying to discover this? Mm-hmm. And it made me think, if an asteroid hit our planet right now, and then the amount of time it would take to rebuild the planet into sustaining life, we're looking at a huge amount of time. Why would those people not think of us as primitive? Because to them, they could be primitive. We could be primitive.
Well, and the thing too is, and I've heard this argument brought about by a couple people that write about this particular topic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it centers around, I think I brought up the Younger Dryas before, where it's this massive asteroid impact right near the end of the ice age that causes rapid meltdown of glacial ice. And so you get a lot of flooding in a lot of areas. This one guy that's amazing, Randall Carlson, he lives in Georgia now. He's from Minnesota. And he started going down this rabbit hole when he was very young, because he noticed some things in just the landscape. And growing up, he started researching it. And if you ever check out, like, some of his videos on this stuff, it's crazy. When you look at, he studied particularly, like, the northwest of the United States. Mm-hmm. Because, like, the Laurentide Ice Cap, which would have been up in Canada, kind of ends around that area. And there's, like, obvious signs of massive flooding, right? Where, like, the rivers and the valleys and mountain ranges in that area are obviously shaped by water, right? Like, if you ever look at, if you go to the beach, for example, and you see how, like, water shapes the sand, it's like that, but in rock, right?
Well, that's what this scientist was talking about on the TED Talk.
Correct.
That all of a sudden the oceans rose, I think he said, like, 300 feet.
Yeah, it's
quick period of time, and he's like, so who knows what's under, you know, what's in the ocean, on the ocean floor now, since it raised up 300 feet. And then to show that that diagram of all of these formations that hit, you know, the United States and then skirted across the United States into, you know, other continents. And he described it as looking like a shotgun blast.
Yes.
That was fascinating. That's where it became like, he isn't going to talk about aliens, thank God.
Right.
Okay, good. Okay, and now I'm on board.
And we have some of that here in South Carolina. They're called the Carolina Bays, where they didn't discover this was a thing until, I think, like, the 50s or the 60s. But obviously, like, there are people here for longer than that, right? And they look like just lagoons, right? Mm. They're like perfectly circular bodies of water. For the most part, most of them have water in them. But when you look at it from the sky, like, there's a pattern in the way that they're dotted.
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest time, the theory was that these Carolina Bays were caused by giant beavers during the Ice Age. Because in the Ice Age, there were beavers like twice the size of people in the United States.
So
that was a theory for the longest time, until they started looking at the pattern. Matter of fact, if I find the map, I shared it once with Sparky and Ronnie and stuff, because they're into this kind of thing. If I find the map, I'll share it with you.
Nice.
So the Carolina Bays are dotted pretty much all through the East Coast. And then there's a pattern of Carolina Bays. Where is it? I want to say, I don't remember. It's either like somewhere in the Midwest or like the West. And if you focus the the direction, because they have like an obvious splash mark, right? Like, you know, if you throw a rock, like the rock doesn't hit and stay in place, right? It keeps rolling in the direction that you threw it in.
Yeah, it skims.
It skims. And so the Carolina Bays have kind of that, where like you have the impact and then they like get shallower as they go in, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if you follow the way that the shape of all these bays, you have an impact that would have been somewhere in the northwest, like near the area where I was saying earlier, where the Laurentide Ice Sheet was. So it's really fascinating. And you see this like in a lot of places. There's a lot of evidence for this kind of thing. There's like a black mac layer that where like literally everything just burnt to ashes about 12,000 years ago.
Hmm.
And this layer is like all over the world. So obviously like it was a huge impact. And there's tons of like flooding evidence in a lot of these places where the glacial water would have melted. And you're talking, I mean, like to shape rocks this way, you're talking about like millions and millions of gallons per like second flowing through some areas. So very fast melting. And yet to go to the thing with the sea level rise. So where I am now, it takes me, I don't know, probably about 3 hours to get to the coast from where I am. Okay. And South Carolina has a lot of beaches. One of the things here is tourism. So I'm about a 3 hour drive from here. If sea levels rose 400 feet, the coastline would be like outside my house.
Wow.
Right. So think about that going back, you know, 10, 12,000 years ago. If sea levels were 400 feet lower, that's like almost an entire state of land that you could keep going past. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And people always settle in places with water, obviously, right? You got to have water. Coastlines are good because it allows for trade. You have fishing, things like that. So people tend to settle in coastlines. And I do wonder, like, how much stuff could we find if instead of going out into space, for example, which, sure, like, I want to go to space too. But instead of going into space, we went out 400 feet into the water to see, like, what lies underneath it.
Yeah, that's what he was proposing.
Yeah.
But I loved even his breaking down of like common iconography throughout the world and very similar like structures. That was that part of it was just fascinating.
So if you look at like Egyptian pyramids, there's some similarities between other pyramids around the world.
Sure.
The ones that look the most similar to me would be like Central American ones and the Southeast Asian ones, like in Thailand and Vietnam and places.
Mm-hmm.
Even like if you look at Indian temples from, you know, like 2000 BC, they're very identical. And there's some interesting stories about that kind of thing as well. Again, that all ends up being conjecture. I remember, I think like a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, I told you about a documentary I saw about this like tribe of Caucasian people in, was it Australia, New Zealand? I can't remember. I think it was in New Zealand. What's the rock? What is he?
He's Polynesian, isn't he?
Yeah, but what do they call themselves?
Oh, I don't know.
Maori.
Okay, yeah.
It took me a second. So in New Zealand, there's a tribe of Maori that are like white with like blue eyes and blonde hair.
Mm.
And if I find the name of that documentary, I'll share it as well. And they've been there for forever. But there's stories like all around the world about like redheaded people with like blue eyes or whatever.
Sure.
And the interesting thing is if when they do like DNA analysis, the interesting path that they have on some of these things is like they left from the Middle East at some point, went into Africa, down into South America, and then into the Polynesian Islands and into Asia. And there's like remnants of this stuff like all over. Like there is a tribe in the Andes, for example, that's got blonde hair and blue eyes.
Hmm.
And then like I mentioned, this Maori tribe, and there's all kinds of legends. And there's legends of this kind of stuff all over the place. Like people coming out of the water and teaching like agriculture or whatever after some cataclysm. There's a lot of similarities in architecture as well. And I do wonder, like, how much we may have lost at some point, and like how much more connected could we have been at some point as well? Like, what if all these people were trading with each other 10,000 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might think that's weird because you're taught a certain thing, but just imagine, like, what if? I think, matter of fact, like a week or two, they announced they had discovered I don't think it was Neanderthal, but I think it was Cro-Magnon, like a Cro-Magnon boat somewhere in Europe. And it was like 100,000 years old. So like if people were building boats before they were people, then why not? You know what I mean? Why couldn't there have been some kind of network, navigation network, trading network? I don't know. It's possible. I think sometimes we get too stuck with like the things that we're taught in school and like that has to be real and anything else isn't, that we often don't want to invest in figuring out a possible alternative that could make more sense.
Yeah, he certainly, towards the end, it wasn't like he was poo-pooing space travel, but he certainly made it clear that maybe money should be put towards why don't we find out about our history, and that might influence or be able for us to project what possibly could be coming down the road for us.
So can I go into, I don't want to say conspiracy theory, but let's just go with that.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Oliver Stone. The floor is yours.
Listen, I will make the next JFK movie. You know, Andrew and I were talking about JFK when he was on. Let me ask you, Nick.
Sure.
You've seen the pictures of JFK's assassination.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The car that JFK was in.
Mm-hmm.
How many people were in the car?
Wasn't there five?
Okay. Five people. What's the layout? Where were these five people?
Two in the front. No, it was four.
Four people. Okay. So how many? Where is it? How are they seated?
Two and two.
See? Mandela effect.
See?
It's six people.
Jesus. How did they even fit all those people in there?
There were three seats in the car. You've never seen this, have you?
I don't recall.
I think it's bullshit. I only remember four and two seats. But apparently the car has a third seat, and the Texas governor and his wife were seated in the middle facing JFK and his wife.
Wow.
All right, anyway, that's not a conspiracy theory. This is true.
All right. You've been on Reddit lately.
No, that's where that is. No, I was watching something on the JFK assassination, and they were talking about the governor and his wife, and I was like, what are you talking about? And then you go look pictures up, and you see the six people in the car, but then you also see like four people in the car. I don't know. Very confusing. All right, conspiracy theory. What if all of it's real, Nick?
Oh, now you're getting into some Grant Morrison territory. Go ahead.
What if all of it's, you know, I love Grant Morrison.
I know. You know, I love Grant Morrison.
What if it's all real and there's a conspiracy to not tell us exactly what we are for whatever reason? I don't know why that is. Maybe
this is very Oliver Stone.
Maybe if we learn what we really are, they can't control us, Nick.
Wow. It's like you're reading The Invisibles for the first time.
Dun, 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 conspiracy theory.
Is that why you're always wearing sunglasses? Because you have bug eyes if you were to take off those sunglasses.
Listen, I'm not talking about aliens, bro. Hey, I mean, I don't know. Hey.
Maybe. I'm asking the question, and I find it interesting that you're answering the question with another question.
My daughter likes to say, are you being Zen with me right now? Because she'll ask me a question, and I reply with a question so she can answer her own question, and she hates it. She hates it. No, I'm just saying, what if it's all real? You know what I mean? Like, what if we were smarter back in the day? What if they destroyed what if like everything's been destroyed multiple times and we start from nothing every time? But like there's a group of people that know the whole thing, like for real.
I'm not going to jump on that hurdle.
Let's just pretend.
But I will say watching this TED talk definitely made me think that could this be a circular thing that has happened before?
You mean all this has happened before, all this will happen again?
I'm just saying for people to build those stone structures so large and perfectly engineered, that's an impressive feat.
Did he have a picture
the iconography, all the stuff that was like overlapping, I found that fascinating.
Was there, I don't remember, so maybe you do, were there pictures of Baalbek in that video?
What's Baalbek?
So Baalbek is in Turkey. Matter of fact, let me look up how big this stone is. Baalbek, There it is. Stone of the Pregnant Woman.
He talked about the pyramids in China, I want to say.
So I want, listen.
That have never really been excavated or looked at because the government doesn't allow in people to like go there and look at that.
Listen, I do not want to ever wish anyone ill will.
Uh-oh, here comes the biggest butt on Nerdy Legion history.
Go ahead. I do not want to wish anyone ill will. However.
Oh, he switched it up. He did the however.
Let me just say, with this whole coronavirus thing.
Yes.
Part of me is like, man, if only China could collapse so we could get a government in there that will let people explore their archaeological sites.
Because if we could get in there.
Listen, there are hundreds of pyramids in China, and the government has them all roped off. Nobody's allowed to go in any of them.
This is what I'm talking about. When he mentioned that, I was just like, oh my God, I want to know all about this, as well as the purses that were through, like, various continents had the same iconography, down to purses, down to some of the animals that, like...
Ah, the man bags, yes.
Yes, and that was just I loved it.
And not just that. So the man bag thing's interesting because that spans thousands of years,
right?
Because I think the first monument that they find that in is in Göbekli Tepe, which is in Turkey, and that's like right at the edge of the Younger Dryas. So it's like I want to say like between 10,800 and 11,400 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's like right. As soon as the ice age is over, bam, like this thing shows up. And the man bags are there. And they also show up in Egypt. So that would have been about 4,000 years ago. Samaria, that's like 5,000-6,000 years ago. There's some in the Mesoamerica. I think the ones that they showed on the video would have been Aztec. So that was like 2,000-1,500 years ago. Yeah, really interesting that like all over the world, this iconography shows up. I was trying to think, so I don't remember if Baalbek's in there. Baalbek's a really interesting site. There is a temple built by the Romans there. I think it's a temple to Zeus when they invaded Turkey. They built this temple there. But what's really interesting about this temple is that they built it on top of an existing temple, except the temple they built it on top of had already been destroyed for a long time. They just... Oh. Use like the bases of it to build their own thing on top. And if you ever want to go down a rabbit hole, this is also an interesting rabbit hole because you see this a lot in a lot of places, including Egypt, the Middle East, in the Americas. Matter of fact, I just watched a video on Machu Picchu where the city of Machu Picchu is built on top of an older site. And the interesting thing about the older sites is that they are megalithic sites. So like we build with bricks. And a lot of these places built with, you know, smaller blocks, right? You can't tell so much in Egypt because, you know, like the pyramid blocks are still fairly big, right? They're like 200 tons. But the interesting thing about some of these sites is they have like gigantic blocks. So if you ever want to see this one of these gigantic blocks, you look up the Stone of the Pregnant Woman. It is a block that was quarried near Baalbek. It was never removed from the quarry site, so it's still there. They never finished quarrying it out of the bedrock. It is 20 meters long, so that's 60 feet long. It weighs 1,000 tons, and like a lot of the blocks at the site are this big.
Wow.
Okay. And remember, these were already there before the Romans got there. Okay, so the Romans did not build these 1,000-ton blocks. Nor did they move them. They were already there when they got there. And you see this in a lot of places, like I said. It's really fascinating. I know in the video they show some of the stuff where you can't fit a knife through in between the cracks of the blocks.
Yeah.
And the shapes of the blocks are really interesting too, right? Because they're not like square blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like it'd be very easy to cut a square block and fit another square block on top of it.
Right.
But these are like jigsaw puzzle pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you cut that? When, you know, theoretically, all you have is like rock chisels or copper tools or whatever, right?
You know, one point that he brought up during his talk that I never even thought about. He goes, why are we not spending any money to examine the dirt that's under these gigantic forms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would even give us answers that right now no one knows.
So, yes, because you can't date rock, right? There's no way to date rock. So the way that they date some of these places is by the organic material mm-hmm. around the rock,
mm-hmm.
Which I think the part of the problem with saying, like, this site is, you know, this many years old is exactly that, that you can't date when the rock was quarried. Because, like, what if let's just say your house, Nick. Okay, let's pretend your house is 10,000 years old. Okay, if I go in there now, I'm gonna be like, well, yeah, this house was built, I don't know, let's just say 100 years ago, right? Because I find organic material from like 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago. If I chip out the concrete, yeah, there's some, I don't know, there's a leaf in here from 100 years ago. This house is 100 years old.
Right.
Okay. But, like, maybe somebody redid the siding of the house or whatever, right? And so that's when that leaf got stuck in there 100 years ago when they redid the siding.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem with a lot of these sites is exactly that. In order to date the site, you need to get a carbon dating for a piece of organic material. That's one problem. Second problem is carbon dating is not accurate for multiple reasons. I mean, you can get a fairly good estimate. But there are things that can actually give you false readings on a carbon dating. For example, an ice age or a melting of an ice age would give you a false reading on the material. Because as the temperature warms up, you have a higher release of carbon dioxide. And so because you have more carbon-14 in the air, you can get a younger reading on a particular thing because there's more carbon available than whatever you're calibrated for. So they do take some of these things into effect. So when you look at carbon datings, sometimes you'll see like such and such date calibrated. And that's how you know that the date is more accurate than just like whatever, 10,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways of dating some of these things, but they're destructive. So, for example, there was a project to date the pyramids. And it ends up not being accurate either because they've done restoration work on the pyramids for thousands of years now.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll do this thing in different parts of the pyramid. And like in some places it says it's 2000 years old. In some places it's 4,000. In some places it says it's 10,000. Okay. And I don't remember the exact name of the thing. But basically they have a way to determine the last time a piece of rock was exposed to sunlight. And they can measure the age of the rock based on that.
Wow.
Yeah. But again, if you're doing rebuild work on it, you're still not going to get an accurate date. You know what I mean?
It's just he threw out concepts that were not science fiction. Like they are concepts that are easily obtained or answers that could be obtained. Might not be easy, but it could be obtained. And it just seemed like he was talking, why are we going into space when we have so many unexplored things that we could be doing here,
mm-hmm.
and solving a lot of mysteries that really aren't mysteries. They're just things that science hasn't given you the answer to.
You know, the older I get, the more I feel like a lot of religious stories are just like really twisted real life events. Right, like a very long game of telephone, right? You've played telephone before.
Sure.
You know, you start off with one thing. By the time it gets to the end and back around to you again, it's a completely different story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But the older I get and the more that I study these things, and as you know, I read every single day. And I read a lot of religion and mythology and stuff because I love this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I read... Number one, the more similarities I see between a lot of things. And number two, the more I think, like, what if it's not just some, like, allegorical story, right? Like, to teach you a lesson.
Right.
But, like, what if some of these things actually happen at some point? I'm not saying everything. But what if, like, the core kernel of it actually happened at some point? Okay.
Or it was blown out just by 5 degrees. It was blown out of proportion, or the facts got skewed by 5 degrees.
Sure. What if instead of, you know, Moses built he built a house-sized boat, okay, in real life. A house-sized boat wouldn't be that big. But, you know, Moses, Noah. After a while, everyone's like, oh, Noah was this great guy. He built this boat. It was the size of 20 houses.
Right.
Right? Or like, oh, well, if he put all these animals in it, like, it couldn't be the size of a regular house. It had to be the size of a stadium. Mm-hmm. Right? That makes more sense. So let's just go with that. You see what I mean?
Like, or did he take 16 pairs of animals on that boat because he loved some animals? And all of a sudden, by the time hundreds of years transpired, it was every species of animal.
Sure, sure.
Two by two.
Any of these things. Well, it could be anything, right? Like, well, what if it was just like two of each animal of like the area in the Middle East where he lived, right? Like, yeah, maybe. That's more feasible than like every single animal, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like, if that's all you know, then that's every animal, because that's all the animals you know.
Right.
Right? So I think there's some kernel of truth to a lot of these stories. And yes, they get embellished, but, you know, people are storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, what differentiates us from other animals is, I think that, the ability for us to tell stories and pass memories down to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because we don't have a lot of instinctual stuff built into us. A lot of the way that we learn how to navigate the world is through stories. So why not?
Right.
I saw a really interesting one today. I gotta rewatch it because I think I missed some stuff. But there was one thing. It was something about there's a lot of iconography with snakes and birds, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of this research was something about at some point, very very far off in the past, there would have been like the snake people and the eagle people.
Hmm.
And there was a big war, and the eagle people won, and that's why, like, snakes are bad, and, like, the snake is a trickster, right, in the Bible and all this. And, like, the eagle's strong and powerful, and it's, like, the emblem of a lot of places. There was a lot of other stuff. Again, I'm not going to go into it because I need to do a rewatch of the thing to make sure I got the whole point of it. But, you know, something as simple as that. Right, like, that's much easier to tell a story where, like, yeah, the eagle ate the snake, instead of, like, you know, we had this giant World War III, or whatever, World War -5000, and, like, all these people died, and, like, this happened and the other. Like, what's easier to tell? You tell an allegorical story, right? Mm-hmm. And you can pass that information along. It's interesting. I've been thinking about this a lot lately, because I was thinking about, like, you know about... I might have asked you this last time. I feel like I'm having deja vu. Do you know about mystery religions?
No.
Okay. So mystery religions are basically... what's a modern example of a mystery religion? Oddly enough, Scientology is a modern example of a mystery religion. Mm. A mystery religion is... You have different levels that you go into in the teachings, right? So when you come in... like, if when you first go into Scientology, I'll use that as a modern example, people will know it. When you go into Scientology, they don't tell you about Xenu, right? They don't tell you about, like, the alien war that, like, people were thrown into volcanoes or whatever the hell, right? They don't tell you any of that stuff. Okay, when you go into Scientology, it's kind of like a self-help course.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and as you go into different levels and get progressively deeper and deeper, you start learning more about, like, the intricacies of how this stuff happens. Until you get to, like, the level where they tell you about Xenu. And part of the reason is, if they tell you about Xenu and people getting thrown into volcanoes, you'd be like, this shit is fucking crazy. I'm out of here. Okay? But by
it's
this
like
point...
Nexi, I'm wanting to, like, brand you.
Exactly. By this point, you're so invested in the belief system that you're like, oh, yeah, of course, like, people got thrown into volcanoes and what the fuck, right? Like, that makes perfect sense. So this is kind of how mystery religions work. And I was thinking about this because, as you know, I've always been one to believe that knowledge should be free and it should be readily available to anybody. And it got me thinking about all these religions because through much of history, this is how it has worked, right? And really, it still works that way now, where there's different levels of practicing a belief system. And at the most basic level, they give you like a set of instructions on how to live your life, quote unquote, properly, right? And I say quote unquote properly because that varies depending on where you are, obviously, right? Which is the reason why you have like Christians hate Muslims and Muslims hate Christians and whatever. That now people hate Chinese because they gave us coronavirus. Missouri is suing China. I don't know if you heard about this. Anyway, so you get these kind of things, right? But as you progress deeper and deeper, you get to learn like the true meaning of some of these things, right? Did you grow up Catholic?
Yes.
Okay. So do you know the meaning of the rosary?
No.
Okay. So that's one of those things where like as you would get deeper and deeper into your teaching, you would learn what the rosary is about. Okay. Or you could just be like a normal Catholic that, you know, you just have your rosary because you're Catholic and you're supposed to have one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the priest tells you to do your Hail Marys with your rosary and you're like, okay, like that forgives my sins. Okay. But if you get to a certain level where you learn what each part of the rosary means, then you start to understand more why it is that you do the rosary prayers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you start learning about the background and where the rosary comes from. And I think when you get to those kind of points is when you start learning how similar all these things are.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that at one point there was like one culture that started it all and there was one language and one religion. But there were definitely like pockets of very similar things. And as groups expand, those things get disseminated into new areas and they start evolving in their own ways. Okay. And you can look at just like quote unquote ancient mythology. The specifics of the stories are different, but the character archetypes and the situations that they go into are basically the same, right? You know, like everyone has like their father god. So like, you know, you would have Zeus or Ra or Osiris or Jehovah or whatever. Like everyone has these things. And the relationship between that god and the other gods is very similar across the board as well. And then, of course, like you obviously have differences where like the way the culture develops, you make a change in your mythology to account for that change in the way that your society deals with its environment. Man, this is not where I wanted to go tonight, Nick.
I like it. We're going to have to call it Joseph Campbell 2.0.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was a Joseph Campbell thing.
Yep.
That's right. The hero with 1,000 faces.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I thought about this a lot, and I've been really like focusing a lot on the language bit as well.
Well, you are a striving linguist, as we know.
Oh man, I need to get back to my conlanging. What's his face just started a new Conlang channel. What's it called? Lang Focus Studios. The guy that did the language for The 100 and Game of Thrones and all that.
Oh really? Wow.
Yeah, he just started a new YouTube channel with another linguist.
Dang,
and,
cool.
And they're creating their own Conlang in real time on these things.
Wow.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm not watching a lot of it because they're all like 2 hours, 3 hours long. And like they're going like deep into specifics and like how exactly to evolve each sound.
Yeah, this isn't a beginner course.
No, this is not a beginner course.
Yeah, it's not beginner friendly.
Mm-mm. But So I've been thinking a lot about languages and Sapir-Whorf hypothesis and stuff. And I think that's interesting. Sapir-Whorf is not, I don't think, considered canon anymore. But it's still an interesting theory to play around with. That's the idea that the way your language is shapes the way that you think.
Mm.
So like there are languages with no time, like no time markers. So how does that affect the way that you look at time, for example? Right?
Wow.
Or like there's languages, there's like a language in Central America, for example. And I think it's some in Asia where the past, if you're talking and you talk about the past, it's like it's behind you, right? So you might like point backwards or do a gesture like that. For them, the past is in front of them because they're able to see it.
Hmm.
And the future is behind them because they can't see it.
Wow.
Because it hasn't happened. There's a language in Australia where they don't have left, right, up, down, back, forward. They use directions.
Sheesh.
So like even like a 3-year-old kid if you're like, well, where's your school? No matter where they are, they could just be like, oh, yeah, my school is northeast, 23 degrees, right? They would never say, like, oh, yeah, down over there to the left. They would never say that. So I think all that stuff is really interesting as well.
Yeah.
And it could have to do a little bit with some of this mythology, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the question, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Maybe kind of the same with language. Like, what came first, the person or the language?
Hmm. I like it.
Was that too much?
No, not at all. I love it.
I think everyone tuned out.
No. I don't care even if they did.
See, that's why we suckered him in this time with the comic talk first.
See, that's where I did my job.
They're like, ah, yes, they're talking comics this time. Psych! And then, gotcha, bitch.
And then we shanghaied them.
Very interesting. Yeah. Ah, Shanghai, that's a good one. We could talk about that one day.
Yeah, of course we can.
We could talk about that one day. What was the one? Damn, I just heard one, something about language. Oh, agnostic. Yeah, that was the one. Talking about evolution of language. Well, I'll make this one super quick.
Oh, go ahead.
So, Nick, what does agnostic mean?
It is, isn't it, do you believe in a higher power, but you don't believe in formalized religion?
Yes, close enough. So the original belief of agnostic was the exact opposite. So an agnostic was someone that had faith that something existed, as opposed to a Gnostic that knew that something existed.
Mm.
Okay, because gnosis is knowledge. So that's pretty interesting. Anyway.
I like both.
Quick aside. You like both? Good. I'm glad.
Yeah, I like both terms on that.
I have become very much a Gnostic.
Ah, gotcha.
Yes.
After your TED talk that you sent to me,
mm-hmm.
with all the hullabaloo that's going around this pandemic, which, hey, guess what? There should be hullabaloo around this pandemic. And I really want to know, I don't want to change gears. I don't want you to think I'm trying to change gears. I just want to tell you this.
Go for it.
First, I want to ask you a question. I assume your state is still a closed state, right?
Come on, bro. We don't believe in closing anything around here.
I don't know. Are you with Georgia and opening up your state?
Yes.
Next week? Okay. So when
we opened this week.
Yes.
Or last week.
Right. They did a soft open.
Yes.
My next question is, are you going out next week to get a tattoo? Because that sounds like that should be a smart idea to do.
Mm-hmm. I am not getting a tattoo next week, but I thought about it.
But you thought about it just for the hell of it.
Yeah, I thought about it. but I did not get one. Here, let me just say this real quick.
But hold on.
Okay,
sorry.
Okay. I thought that was your question. Go ahead.
No, that was just a joke. My original question statement, whatever. Mm-hmm. But after hearing all this political hullabaloo around that and around the pandemic, which, guess what, you know, people should be talking about stuff like this, and especially our elected officials should be talking about this type of stuff. The amount of people that I hear on these talking head shows, politicians specifically, that obviously they're going to do their own political slant to it to either drum up support for their position from their constituents or try to cement themselves in as a positive force, wherever they're leaning, positive, negative. They think everyone thinks they're on the positive side, however you want to look at it. But because of the TED talk, it really formalized my thinking, especially around like church and state and that separation. Mm. And whenever I hear somebody, when I hear a politician talking about, well, we have to look at it from the science point of view. We have to let them take the lead. We have to follow science. We have to do X, Y, Z. And then you hear other people talking about the faith of it. And that's where I'm like, I'll just look over at Julie, the cruise director. I'm like, yeah, everyone should be following the science of it. Because you know what that's based on? Fact. Everything else is not based on fact.
Mm.
And I think she's finally come around to like, yeah, everything needs to be science related. like everything needs to be proven right now. We really need to prove X, Y, Z. And because I've always been that way with her, like, and it drives her crazy because I'm just like, nope, church and state, nope. Like, not that you can't have faith, not that you can't believe in church, not that there isn't a place for it. But especially around this pandemic thing, it's like, What we need is science. Like, go home and say 20 rosaries. I don't care, but I don't want, I want scientists to be studying, like, the facts. Like, you have the smartest people in the room, supposedly. Like, let them dictate stuff. That's all. Like, that TED Talk really opened up my eyes to, like, you're right. We should be paying more money for getting facts, getting scientific facts to prove out these questions instead of just asking questions. Like, let's go after these answers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I that's so weird that you brought that up. I'm having this weird dilemma this week with this exact thing. Because I agree that I don't think we have enough good science. And I think there's a lot of people reacting more on economic need than common sense. And I understand the need for people to work and to be out and for the economy to get back to normal and this, that, and the other. But what I hope comes out of this is that people realize that the way that we have structured things to work does not make sense. Okay?
Yeah, everyone gets a respite check to help you through the hard times. I get that. Everybody needs help. I get it. But back to your point, what was it, 2 months ago, when you're like, well, we're only going further into debt. We're taking, it's not like it's free money. Like, we have to pay all that back. So, well,
and let me tell
anything,
you,
that just makes certain politicians look good in dumb eyes.
And next year, people are going to be very upset when they don't get tax money back because you're just getting a loan this year for your tax refund next year. Just remember that.
I know. And I brought that up to the wife as well, because, and she certainly is not one of those people that turned a blind eye. She's just like, oh my God, if this continues to happen, oh my God, how is people's approval rating so good right now? Oh my God. And she's freaking out just because, I mean, she's in the bat. Like, guess what? If we're looking at, what is it, Darwin's survival of the fittest? Mm-hmm. She ain't one of the fittest. Like, she's going to be one of the first ones to go. Like, old people and her, they're she's gone. So what she needs is science. Like, that's what she's looking at. Like, that's what, like, draws her in. And I'm just like, I get it. But the majority of people, they look at this fat check that's all of a sudden free. And they're like, hell yeah. Now I can pay X, Y. And I get it. Everyone's hurting. Everyone wants to pay bills. I totally understand. But don't make it come off like we're helping you guys out. This is almost like you're just offering us a loan.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's not even that, because it doesn't cover anything, right?
But I'm just saying, like, people look at it like free money, and instead you have to look at it like, that ain't free. You're going to pay for that down the road. This is just something to, like, this is a shiny object that you wave at a cat while you're reaching around to grab the cat's tail because it's paying attention to the shiny object. That's all that is.
Here's the way I look at it. You know, I like to be, I like to be blunt with things, and I'm working on my being 100% blunt. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, the thing with wearing a mask, right? So in order to go inside a bank now, not only do I have to make an appointment, but I also have to wear a mask when I go in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, the mask doesn't do anything. Okay? And I see this all day long, people wearing masks, and they like pull the mask down to scratch their face and put the mask back in place. Or like cashiers at the register wearing the same gloves as they're to getting down their entire line at the store.
Mm-hmm.
All that does, it's a psychological trick. Okay, remember last episode I was talking about monkey mind. This is monkey mind. Gloves are only effective if you change them out every time you ring a customer at a checkout line.
Sure.
The mask is only effective if you don't touch your fucking face.
Right.
Okay. If you do any of these other things, it is no longer effective. You've just created this illusion that you're perfectly safe because you're wearing masks and gloves.
Buddy, it's what we've been talking about for the last month. It's everybody wants a sense of quote-unquote normalcy.
Sure. And it's the same thing with this tax check.
Okay? Yeah, it's a security blanket.
Here's $1,200. You guys are going to be great. I posted this on Twitter. Within like 2 minutes, I had a reply from someone that said, that won't even pay my rent for the next month and a half. And I said, that's why I'm sharing this tweet.
Yeah, that's the point.
That's the point.
Right.
Okay. And listen, I had someone at work tell me when they get their check, they're going to buy a new TV. Okay.
Yes, of course. There's plenty of people doing that.
And listen, I understand that we're fortunate.
They look
enough
at it like a
essential.
Tax refund.
Yeah, I understand we're fortunate enough to be essential, and we're still working, and we have to worry about that. Yeah. But that's not the point of the $1,200.
Right.
See what I mean?
That's like getting a tax refund at the end of the year. What you're doing is giving more of your paycheck to the government, and now the government's going to hand you back that money.
Correct.
After they held on to it for a year and used it.
For a year and used it.
Yep.
It's like, I love this one. Okay. I'll go to the store sometime, and I stay in line, and the lady in front of me gets so angry because she wants to get cash back, and she has to pay a dollar or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I never get cash back, so I don't know. Let's just say a dollar. That sounds good.
Sure.
And they get so mad. Why do I have to pay to get my money out? And I always want to say to them, because it's not your fucking money.
Right.
Right? When you put it into the bank, it is now the bank's money.
Right.
They are holding it for you, but it is their money. That's why you are paying to get your money out.
And I want to slap them upside the head and be like, my parents couldn't do this. They couldn't walk into any store and be like, give me $20 extra.
Uh-huh.
Like, when did that happen? Like, everyone is just like, God, yeah. The amount of forgetfulness and just sticking in the current here and now is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Crazy. And so I'm going to continue with my bluntness. And I don't want you to take offense to this because, as you know, I just like to say things as I think of them. Because I do know your wife is a special case. But I think about this with a lot of things and never with anyone in particular. I mean, my wife has certain things health-wise that were we not had to have this current system that we have, she would not be healthy, we'll just say.
Sure. Okay?
So trust me when I say that I understand that. And this is part of the dilemma that I have. The thing that I always think is, you know, we have created this like fake bubble of how the world is. But the world outside of human society doesn't work this way. And, you know, as people have evolved and continue to evolve, maybe, the one thing that you always need to remember is that, you know, nature doesn't care about Nick or Martin or anybody listening, right? Nature just wants, like, humans to be around and be humans, or cats to be around and be cats. But nature doesn't care about a specific human, right? We evolved to just continue the species. And at some point, the species no longer, let's say like pandas, right? Like if pandas weren't forced to fuck in a zoo, we'd have no pandas.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There was like a big article, I think last week, that one panda got that other panda pregnant. And this is why I bring it up. Because they haven't had like a panda give birth in the wild in like 30 years. So pandas are going extinct because they don't want to have babies. They just want to sit in a tree and eat. Goddamn, what is it? Eucalyptus.
Yep.
And it's the same thing with all this stuff. Like, does it suck that people get sick and die? Sure. But overall, in the big scope of things, like, Martin is not any more special than anybody else, right? So
yeah.
If I go away, then I go away.
Right.
But how do we stop from people not going away is what we should think about. And the problem is that nobody thinks about that. Everyone thinks about, well, how can I make it to tomorrow? And by extension, you know, my kids or my wife or my husband or whoever. And because of that, we never have legit answers to anything, right? We just continue to do the same thing. What's the Einstein quote? The definition of madness is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Yep.
It's the same thing. Yeah, this is weird. So I was reading this book last night. As you know, I've been reading Manly P. Hall's The Secret Teachings of All Ages.
Mm-hmm.
Let me turn on the light and see if I can find this quote here. Might take me a second. Did I mark it? God, maybe I didn't mark it. Anyways, continue. React as I find this quote.
I don't know how much reacting you want from me.
I got it. So I can't remember the exact text that he's talking about. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So I can't remember the exact text that he's talking about. I think it's the Pymander, which is the Hermetic test. So it's from Egypt. So we'll just go with 4,000 years ago. Okay. And I read this to my wife last night, and I was like, I can't believe we've been doing the same shit for 5,000 years. Okay, so here's the quote. All right, so he's talking about how the world was created and then people being created. All right, so it says, nature, beholding the descent, wrapped herself about the man whom she loved, and the two were mingled. For this reason, earthy man is a composite. Within him is a sky man, immortal and beautiful. Without his nature, mortal and destructible. Thus suffering is the result of the immortal man's falling in love with his shadow and giving up reality to dwell in the darkness of illusion. I'm thinking to myself, what the fuck? Like, even when we were, like, walking around in loincloths, we're so stupid that we don't see how the world works. We're just so consumed with our own well-being that we don't give a shit about humanity as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And this is obviously a thing that's been going on for the entirety of human history.
Oh, for sure.
So, Nick, let me ask you this. You know, a few months ago, whenever it was that we were talking about this ancient people topic, you know, my question to you was, surely there were more smart people back then. And you were like, eh, I don't know. And now, as I think about it, you're probably right. How the fuck did we make it this far?
Yeah, that's why it's survival of the fittest. I mean, you hope that the cream rises to the top, you know? You hope.
So are you saying that we're still here because the people that are left are all assholes? And we're just we're just procreating more deeper assholes? Because this is what you're saying.
I'd have to think about that one. I hope not. I hope we're getting better as time goes on, but
Who
the hell knows?
But how are we surviving if we're just not, like, keeping the assholes around? Because I just don't understand, bro. Like, I'm being dead serious. Like, think about other animals. Are any as selfish and brutish as people? I mean, maybe. I don't know, because I don't speak other animals' languages.
It's true. There's a basic instinct of that animals have that we still have, that's for sure.
Well, we do have monkey mind.
Yeah, that we do.
That is very true. I don't know. It's pretty nuts. Here's what I want to happen. We're approaching Grand Solar Minimum. Maybe we'll have another ice age and sea levels will lower 400 feet and we can go digging. You know what I mean? That's what I want to do. I like the cold. I don't mind. I see people wearing jackets right now. It's like 75 degrees outside. What are you doing?
It was 42 degrees yesterday.
Not here. It's hot and humid.
Wow.
And we might have tornadoes again tonight. But, yes. So that's what I want. Give me another ice age.
Maybe you're going to fall in the ocean. Who the hell knows?
In the immortal world, words of Tool, learn to swim. Zoe hates it because she'll say something and I start singing a song. She's like, is there a freaking song to everything I say? And I'm like, yes, there is.
Now let me school you.
Yes. So, we're in a weird place, Nick. We're in a weird place. We'll see what happens with old Corona. I think they're not making Corona beer anymore. Did you hear about that?
No.
Yeah, they stopped making Corona beer.
Probably smart. You don't really need that name attached to something right now.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yep.
Boy, talk about misguided. Anyways. So I want to talk about a movie that I watched.
I want to talk about a movie I watched.
All right. You want to go first? Would you like to go first? Uh-oh.
What?
Oh, okay. I thought I lost you. I heard beep, beep. Tell me about the movie that you watched, Nick.
I want to hear yours.
Oh, okay. Well, I watched Anna.
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 Is it based on Leo Tolstoy's Anna Karenina?
Oh, that would have been awesome. I didn't think about that because she is Russian. Mm-hmm. But I do not think so.
Okay.
Anna, it came out a couple years ago. It's free to watch on Amazon Prime Video. I highly recommend it. I thought it was great. It's like Jason Bourne, but with a woman.
Oh.
Yeah. And the reason I'm recommending it is because, you know, I really want to see this Black Widow movie.
Sure.
I'm very curious. Have you seen the – do you watch Film Theory on YouTube?
No.
Okay, so I share this with DJ from the Brightside Chat. Go subscribe to that show because he's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I sent this to him because they were talking about all these Marvel shows getting pushed back and why that could be. So I sent him the – I think it's the latest one. It is – Film Theory is the name of the YouTube channel. The name of the video is something, something, something Dark Avengers. And I don't want to pose the entire theory, but basically, as you can imagine, it involves the Dark Avengers. And it speculates on why this movie's pushed back and why other things, including the Disney Plus exclusive shows like Falcon Winter Soldier and one of the other ones, got pushed back when the movie got pushed back. So go watch that video. I love the theory. I think there's a couple holes in it. DJ agreed with one of the holes. But I think overall seems like a pretty solid theory.
Okay.
Also, it might spoil the fact that Taskmaster is not in this movie, in which case I would be very angry if that's the case.
Oh, no.
Anyways, go watch the video. I thought it was great. It poses some interesting questions about Black Widow and the MCU. But anyways, so I want to see this movie because it goes back in history of how Black Widow became Black Widow. And I want to see that. And there's been a couple movies lately that have done this. One was the, what was that called? Not Red Robin. I don't remember. Red something. Right. And it was very similar. It was like a ballerina school. And they were like secretly raising like spies, like assassins.
Was that the Jennifer Lawrence film?
Yes. There was a lot of sexy time in that movie.
Oh.
And then the other one is this one, Anna. And I think this one is more like what I would want out of a Black Widow movie. It starts off fairly basic. And as the movie progresses, you have some time jumps. And I really like the way you do the time jumps. So like something happens and you're like, wait, what the hell? And it's like 6 months ago. And you're like, oh, that's how that happened. And then you jump back to the present and something happens. You're like, wait, what? And you're like 3 years ago. And you're like, oh, okay. So there's a lot of this time jumping back and forth, like from beginning to end, like even the twist at the end, you have a flashback scene that explains it. Basically you have this girl, she's brought in to infiltrate this modeling school in Paris and begins taking out targets for the KGB. There is some sexy time in this movie. There's no nudity though. It was very well done. It's got, oh God, what's the woman's name? She was,
I see Sasha Luce.
I'm trying to think what the KGB, Helen Mirren. That's it.
Yeah.
Helen Mirren's in it. She's fantastic. Yeah. Sasha Luce is Anna. She's very good. She is very attractive.
And Scarecrow is in it.
Scarecrow plays a CIA agent.
Gotcha. Yes.
Alex and Chekhov.
And it's produced and directed by Luc Besson.
It is Luc Besson, your favorite.
He is one of my favorites.
Yeah. I did not see that. So until I might have to watch this. Yeah, you do. It's fantastic. It's really well done. It's, like I said, it's like the Bourne movies, but with a woman. Except not so much like digging into where you come from, because like she knows where she comes from, and
it's
she knows
like the flashback stuff's a little clunky. I don't want to be, well, the way you're describing it, it sounds like it could be a little clunky.
Well, the thing is, you could think that until you see it.
Okay.
Because like this is a spy thriller through and through, and because it's a spy thriller, you have to have misdirection at every point. And so you have those flashback moments to you as a viewer understand the misdirection.
Gotcha.
Like you will not be confused with what's going on for more than a minute in this movie.
Okay. So it's not too jarring.
No, not at all. It's not jarring at all.
Okay.
And like the flashback scenes are not like, oh yeah, like I put this gun in the toilet 6 weeks ago. It's not that. Like it goes with the overall plot of the movie.
Is it similar to Besson's La Femme Nikita?
I could see that for sure. Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Which, hey, that there's nothing wrong with that. That was a great film.
Great movie.
Yep.
Great movie. So yeah, I highly recommend it.
Okay.
Highly recommended. Anna.
That sounds really, that I will put that on my Amazon Prime list.
Mm-hmm. Dude, and when you get to the end, you're like, yes. And here's the cool thing.
Is it really violent, or is there torture in it for Julie, the cruise director?
Is there torture? There is no torture. There's a torture scene at the beginning, but you don't see anybody being tortured. You see the woman with a bloody face. And she does get killed, but it's off camera.
Gotcha.
No, it's not. It's not grotesque at all.
Okay.
I'm trying to think if there's anything.
So it's like a Bourne film, pretty much.
Yeah. Gotcha. There's nothing. Like, I would rate this PG-13, maybe.
Okay. Good to know.
What's it rated at? It's rated R? Yeah, I don't know about that. I would say PG-13.
Okay.
But yeah, it was really good. The acting's phenomenal. You know what? Oddly enough, I would say the worst acting is from the main character.
Really?
But she's pretty good. And I mean, she nails the action scenes.
Okay.
But no, she does a pretty good job. The twist is really great at the end.
All right.
All is well in the world at the end. But in a spy way.
This sounds excellent.
So I recommend it. And the way that it ends ties back in with the beginning. Cause at the beginning, I'm like, none of this has to do with anything in this movie. And then you get to the end, you're like, ah, okay.
Now the puzzle pieces are put together.
Yeah. So very good. I'm Red Sparrow. That was the name of that movie.
There you go.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was Luc Besson. Fantastic. Watch it.
Yeah, I looked it up and that made me a lot more interested.
It's rated a 6.6 out of 10, which means it's good.
Yeah. That's not going to make me shy away. Luc Besson, he can drag me to a film. The problem is he puts his name as producer all over these films that I watch, and I'm like, he didn't even direct this. What the hell?
He produces
a lot of films.
Yes. Dude, Helen Mirren's awesome.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She plays this, like, hard-ass KGB person. Like, she trains all the new KGB agents, and she does, like, the special missions. God, she's a badass.
Yeah, that she is.
She's a badass, and she, like, almost, you never see her, like, standing up, basically. Because as part of her backstory, you learned, like, why she's so tough on Anna, coming into the KGB. And she tells a story of her first mission with the KGB, where they threw her off a plane to some mission in, like, Siberia or something, and her, like, chute didn't engage properly, so she broke her leg on the landing, and she still had to perform the mission. Yeah. Anyways. Recommended!
I like it.
Mm-hmm. So what did you watch?
I watched a film that came out last fall, in November, late last fall. Called Never on Amazon Prime, so it's free. Called Never Surrender, a Galaxy Quest documentary.
Oh, I just put that on my queue. How was it?
Put it on your queue and go watch it. It had just as much heart as the film that it's documenting, Galaxy Quest. They talk to pretty much everybody in the cast, as well as like the producers and the studio heads. They talk to an editor, the director, even the composer of the film score. Like, they got really in depth, as well as people that like still will cosplay characters from Galaxy Quest. But they talk to Brent Spiner and Will Wheaton, and both of them have stories about how Galaxy Quest is the Star Trek film that was never filmed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, really good. And it actually, I would say like four or five times, Julie, the cruise director, was like, we should watch Galaxy Quest again. I'm like, yeah, right? We should. Nice. Yeah. So
did you?
We still haven't. We just watched the documentary yesterday, so we didn't watch it today. But that certainly is in our queue, which is great. So highly recommend from Amazon Prime. They went pretty in depth with a lot of stories, especially going back and forth. Like, I didn't even know Harold Ramis was tapped to be the original director of it, and then he bailed.
Huh.
But they have a lot of really neat stories about rewrites on it. They were told by the studio heads to make the film not PG-13, but PG, because they wanted an audience of 8 to 12-year-olds to go.
Oh, wow.
And they were like, wait, we're making a movie that's sort of serious and has, you know, the undertones, the underpinnings of the story is, you know, pretty, not serious, but, you know, it's dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the character turns and stuff. And the studio wanted it to be slapsticky for an 8-year-old.
Interesting.
And they show the trailer for Galaxy Quest, and everybody, all the cast and crew were just like, how can you watch that and think that that has anything to do with the finished product? And it's true. It was like, oh my God, I have no idea what they were trying to convince people to go and see. It was just a big, huge mistake.
I love that movie. I can't wait to see this.
Yeah, you should watch it. It's really, really good.
Huh.
So
very good. Galaxy Quest.
Yep. Never Surrender.
There was a comic book that was like Galaxy Quest with superheroes.
They actually were in talks with Amazon to do a Galaxy Quest television show.
That would be awesome.
And then Rickman passed.
Ah.
So it all just fell apart.
That's too
bad. But the amount of Rickman stories, that's worth watching alone.
Yeah.
The Alan Rickman stories, yeah.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Very good. Never Surrender. I got to ask you.
Yeah?
Do they use the Corey Hart song as the intro?
No, they didn't, sadly.
That's a missed opportunity.
It is.
Mm-mm-mm. That's too bad.
Yeah.
All right. I guess I'm going to bump that up. I don't know. I was watching something and it recommended me that. And I was like, how have I not seen this before?
Yeah. And it was released November 26, 2019. Like, especially for a film that I don't believe Amazon produced. That thing came to Amazon real quick. I was really impressed. And I think Film Threat was a producer of the documentary.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes. I was really impressed, especially, you know, they even talked to Tim Allen and Sigourney Weaver. So they had everybody there.
I will have to check this out.
And don't worry, Martin. They even had Justin Long. I know you were going to ask.
Ah, I forgot he was there.
Yeah.
What's he doing? He's got some... He does like God, what is it? Like some music? Like I don't remember. It's like a gig site for musicians.
Hmm.
Yeah, like he's got a startup.
I was just thrilled to hear Sam Rockwell talking about it.
Hmm.
And he was pretty self-effacing. Like, oh yeah, I was taking myself way too serious.
Very good.
Because it seemed like Galaxy Quest was the movie that pushed him into doing a little bit more lighthearted fare. Which, nothing wrong with that. He was one of the highlights of Charlie's Angels? Wasn't he in the McG film, Charlie's Angels?
Bro, you act like I watched that.
Bro, you should watch it. It's McG. That guy can direct with some style, dude.
I guess. I'll think about it.
You want to see somebody ripping off action sequences from The Matrix and Speed Racer? McG is your guy.
We'll see.
And Drew Barrymore used to be my girl, so.
Yeah. You know, maybe I did watch that. When did that come out? 20 years ago?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I might have watched that. I'll have to see.
I'm not talking about the reboot, for God's
That's,
sake.
That's Lucy Liu and what should we call it?
You got it.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah.
He was in it?
There's some, yeah, he was the villain that at the end he did a weird dance sequence.
Oh, Jesus.
That was up there with Crispin Glover.
Oh, that guy.
Yep.
He was something.
Surrender, highly recommend.
All right, I will check that out. Yeah. If you're into Bigfoot stuff,
who isn't?
Let me recommend Don't Call Me Bigfoot.
Wow.
I just watched that. It's good.
Okay.
It does go into the Bigfoot stuff, but it's also about like Bigfoot experts.
Ooh. Okay.
So that's cool. And it's pretty short. It's like an hour long.
As long as it isn't, what is it, Ghost Hunters?
No.
Wasn't the TV show Ghost Hunters?
No, that shit's so fake.
That's what I'm saying. As long as it isn't like that. Like, I don't mind following somebody who truly believes, but at some point I look at those ghost hunters and it's like, you're just making money. You're not chasing ghosts. Come on.
Yeah, that's set up.
Yeah.
No, Don't Call Me Bigfoot's good. So if you're into that kind of stuff, check it out. It's about an hour long. And like I said, it is about the Bigfoot thing, but it's also like about people that research this stuff and why. And I like that. That was cool. I've never seen a Bigfoot thing that was not focused on goddamn Bigfoot. Which, I mean, I get it.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But, yeah, it was good. I have not seen this yet, but I did put it on my queue. Remember, we were talking about this. Mm-hmm. There is, on Amazon Prime, the Bigfoot Alien Connection revealed.
Yes. Okay? Yes, you did tell me about that.
Because that came up in conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I did watch, I want to talk about these trailers that I sent you, but I did watch a new show.
Oh.
I watched the first episode of the Amazon original Tales from the Loop.
And
I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
It was very good. Have you checked this out yet?
No, I haven't.
Have you seen the trailers?
Yes.
Okay. So when I tweeted about this, I said it was the emo version of The Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Mike immediately chimed in, and because I always said emo Batman was terrible. So just because something is emo does not make it terrible. This is very good.
Okay.
So I recommend it. The episodes are almost an hour long. They're like 50-something minutes. I only watched the first one, but I think it gives you a nice introduction to what the series could be. I hope the rest of the series is good as well. This first episode deals... never mind. I can't say what it deals with because it'll spoil the twist.
Yeah, don't spoil any twist.
I will say this. There's a girl. The whole series takes place in this town called Mercer, Mercer, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And the largest employer of this town is this place that does science experiments. And so from my understanding of the trailer, every episode has to do with something weird and its connection to this place. And so having watched the first episode, there's a girl, a normal girl. She goes to school. Her mom works for Mercer. She's a scientist. She may be doing something sketchy. We never learn what that is. The mom goes missing, and the girl tries to find her. And that's where I will stop. But it's very good.
Do you know the lineage of this show?
I do not.
Nathan Halperin. I think he writes it or he produces it.
That name sounds familiar. Who is it?
And this will totally fit right into your wheelhouse as well as mine. He was the writer producer on Legion and The Killing.
Yes.
So this is so on up my alley and in my queue, and I will be watching that this week.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. Him alone is enough to sell it.
Really, really good.
And only 8 episodes. I like it. Yep. I want smaller, more compact shows.
Yep. And it seems like a true anthology, right?
Is it a Twilight Zone feel to it? All individual standalone episodes? Or do you think that they're going to have things running through it?
So, again, I've only seen the first episode, so I don't know. From my understanding, each story is independent.
Okay, so your story did wrap up. The first episode's story wrapped up.
Correct.
It just might have the same characters fall into different stories.
No, from my understanding, there's no connection between any episode in any way.
Okay.
The only connection is this science lab.
Yeah, Julie the Cruise director and I might have to watch this next weekend.
Dude, it's very good. And like I said, it's like an emo Twilight Zone because like this first episode was very emotional.
Okay. All right.
And the acting's great. And there's two little kids in the first episode. And, you know, it's hard to, like, sell the emotion with little kids.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked.
I'm putting it on our list.
Very good. Tales from the Loop. Highly recommended. What's this rated at? I don't even look at that. 7.5. That's a good rating. It's not a real rating, but it's a good rating.
Okay.
We'll go with an 8. That is an honest rating.
Gotcha.
Rob Krieger will rate this a 7.
Oh, no. No, he won't.
No, he won't. He'll really like it, too.
Okay.
Have you watched any shows, or should we get into trailers?
I haven't watched TV shows in ages.
Oh, let me tell you.
Other than garbage TV shows, which I can share with you, I watched Amazon Prime's original Making the Cut. Yes.
What is that?
That's Julie the Cruise director. She wanted to watch it. So I watched it.
It's Heidi Klum's show. Okay.
Yes, it's Project Runway.
Right.
With Tim Gunn and Heidi Klum.
Yes.
But I will say, as still a fan of Heidi Klum and her walk, she looked spectacular.
I bet.
Yeah.
She's in her 50s, right?
Yeah, I think like 53 or something.
Man, she looks good.
Yeah, heck yeah. She can still strut that stuff.
Mm-mm-mm. Just very briefly, we watched, I think, nope, that's not it. It's called Killdozer Day.
Wow. Is it based on the rock group Killdozer?
No, it is based on the Marvin Heemeyer story. This guy in Colorado in 2004, bulletproofed his bulldozer and started bulldozing his entire town in Colorado.
Wow.
And then killed himself. Christ.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a documentary?
It is a documentary.
Where was this on?
That's a good question.
Ah, come on.
I will ask my wife. My wife told me about this, and I was like...
Oh, I did think of another TV show I did start. Okay.
So my wife told me about it, and I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then I go in there, and she's like very intently watching. And so I sat down, and I was like, all right, this is actually good. Because they have, like... all the video footage, because like this whole thing was videotaped.
When did this happen?
2004.
Jeez, yeah, you're right. It would have been videotaped.
Like the whole thing's videotaped. Like all the chases. Well, I mean, I don't know how quick. It's not a high speed chase because it's a bulldozer. But like the whole thing where he's like rampaging through town, and like they have commentary as, you know, the videos being shown, like people involved in the case, the police officers, people that lived in the town. Like they show when they try to put like other heavy equipment in front of the guy to stop him, and he's just like bulldozes right through it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. It was a crazy story. And they say at the end why it's not like a huge thing that's remembered. I'm trying to think what happened. Oh, I think Reagan died the day after.
Ah, there you go.
So, like, nobody covered this in the news because everyone was covering Reagan's death.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yep. But, yeah, you got to watch this thing, man. It's crazy. Just look up Killdozer documentary. I can't remember the exact name of it.
Tread?
Yes, that's it.
I did look that up. That will be going on in my queue. That sounds amazing.
Tread. Yep, that's it. It's called Tread.
That Man, sounds
great. Dude, it's so good. It's really good. I was surprised.
Jesus, what are you doing? I'm looking it up now on, God, what the hell's the app? On Just Watch. Mm-hmm. And it does not look like, it looks like you can rent it all over the place, but there is no streaming for it right now.
Okay, so she may have rented it then. Whatever the rental is, I think it's worth it, dude. This story is crazy.
I might have to get that. That looks absolutely nuts.
Yep. Recommended.
All right. I'll put it on the list.
Oh, interesting. The guy that wrote the documentary did the Mars TV show for National Geographic. That was very good.
Oh, wow.
Huh. Interesting. Okay, yeah, so Tread. Check that out.
Yeah, that does sound good.
So I sent you two trailers.
Hold on. The last show that I watched?
Oh, yeah.
It's a 10-part docuseries that started last week, called Last Dance.
Last Dance.
Yeah, it's an ESPN Films documentary. And it's also co-produced by Netflix. So my guess is Netflix will probably get it once all 10 episodes run.
Mm-hmm.
But it's based on I believe it was the last year Jordan was around.
Oh.
Or the last year Phil Jackson was around the Bulls, and they had like unprecedented, this camera crew had unprecedented access to the team that year for whatever reason, but they never, the Bulls and Jordan and Phil Jackson never allowed any of the footage to surface till now. So it's the same group of people, which who cares if you're a Bulls fan or not? I don't care if you are. And it doesn't even matter that I am, but it's the same crew that did the OJ ESPN documentary.
Uh-huh.
And that was the part that I was like, oh, well then shoot, they can make the lifespan of like a duck be engaging and interesting. So I'm completely sold. And it did. Julie, the cruise director, was up taking a bath. And I hollered up to her. I'm like, do you want to watch this Michael Jordan documentary or not? And she has no interest in sports. So she was like, no, go ahead. And this is exactly what I did with the OJ documentary. And sure enough, she can hear it upstairs in her bath. And she came downstairs and I'm like, I only have like 20 minutes left. Just let me watch this because I don't want to lose its place. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And as soon as it ended, just like the OJ documentary, do you have another episode? Let's watch another. And she is full on, like, today, the next day, she is full on, like, telling her sister, you got to watch this Last Dance. Oh, my God. This thing's really good. Mm. And I'm looking forward today. I guess every week, every Sunday, they're putting out like two episodes. So it's going to last, whatever, a month and a half by the time I see the very end of it.
Yeah.
But it's pretty freaking compelling. But I think it's the crew. They know how to do a documentary series.
So this is rated a 9.5 out of 10.
Yeah. It's really, I can see why it took so 20 years for this footage to come out. Because they really are pretty... there is no team meetings where the door's closed. Mm. That camera crew is in everything. So it's good.
So how many episodes is this? I see two are released. Oh, 10 episodes total.
Yeah, 10 total. So tonight is week two. So there'll be another two episodes out tonight. Yeah, it's good. Highly recommend. But your trailers. Let's hit your trailers.
I got to watch this, man. Jordan was my jam.
Yeah, it's fat. Episode two is all about them sort of screwing over Scottie Pippen, which I never heard much of. Yeah. But to actually have, and I mean, they have all of the players talking. Like everybody that's part of it is talking in this documentary. So it's fascinating to hear like Scottie Pippen talking about and actually being able to reflect on something that happened to him 30 years ago. Mm. Yeah, it's good. It's real good.
Nice. The Last Dance. That sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
That's on ESPN. Do I have ESPN?
ESPN, ESPN Plus. But like I said, before even this flash of the title, it says ESPN Films and Netflix presents The Last Dance. So my guess is once episode 10 hits, give it a week and it will be on Netflix. No doubt.
I'm trying to, here it is. When will The Last Dance be on Netflix?
There you go. And to be honest with you, I wish I could have binged more. We finished two episodes and it's like, I could go for another two. Like, I don't like this slow dribble that's happening on Amazon and like, I don't want that anymore.
All right. I can't find a release date on Netflix, but I will wait until episode 10 is out.
There you go.
Oh, here we go. July 19th, 2020.
There you go. So right. Another 5 weeks tack on to today's date, another 5 weeks, all of them will be out, and then what, a month later, 30 days later?
Yeah, that's good, man. That's two and a half months. Yeah.
I'm done. Yeah, you have other stuff you can watch.
I was going to say, I could just wait till it's over and then get a ESPN trial, but by that point, I could just get it on Netflix.
Right.
Cool. Yes, two trailers.
Yes.
I want to talk about the second one I sent first.
Sure.
And then about the first one. So I sent you two trailers, sent you the trailer for Snowpiercer, and I sent you the trailer for The Great.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me tell you, I am not a person for period pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I hate period pieces. I think they're stuffy and boring for the most part. That's like, you know, when everyone was watching, what was that show? Nah, I can't remember. That British show that everybody was watching. What's the name of it?
Downton Abbey.
Yes, that one. Yeah. That's not, no thanks.
Do you hate period pieces more than you hate musicals?
Ooh, that's tough.
I know.
Because
you are a literary man, so you would think that there is some fondness for period pieces.
Yeah, that's true.
But then you also have Grease in your life, so there's some fondness for musicals. Everybody loves Grease. Come on.
Who was this? I think DJ was talking about this. About like what makes a musical. Because like Dirty Dancing's not a musical, right? Even though there's music in it.
Yeah, it's a music-inspired film.
Yeah. Anyways.
Like American Graffiti. American exactly. Graffiti would not be the same film without its soundtrack.
Correct. Like, Grease is a musical, right? I mean, I remember Grease being mostly singing.
And it is.
So it's a musical.
Yeah, without a doubt.
All right. Do I hate musicals more than period pieces?
And also, it's about teen pregnancy, too. Just
Yes. So, I think I do hate musicals more than period pieces.
That would have been my guess for you.
Yeah, yeah. Because there are some period pieces that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
What was that show? The one about King Henry VIII. Nah, it doesn't matter.
Henry VIII?
No. That wasn't called that. What was the name of his family? That was the name of the show.
Is this like a PBS show?
No. Was it an HBO show? It was very good.
Oh.
The Tudors.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I could see you liking something like John Adams. I could see you liking something like that.
Yeah. So the Tudors is great. I was watching called Templars, I think, something like that, on History Channel. There's two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
That's not so much a period thing though, because they take some liberties with the history. But yeah, I like that kind of thing. In terms of like period pieces, I mean, that's tough, man. Like when they make movies like Emily Bronte books into movies, I tend to like those.
But you ain't sitting down watching Rent, for God's sake.
No.
Right.
No, for sure not.
Even when I highly recommend musicals, you're like, yep, let's move on.
Yes. So The Great, at first I was like, period piece, why are you recommending me this trailer?
How do you not have my wants and needs and desires down
yet? Yeah, you should know this by now.
Right. Where's this algorithm?
But the actress looked familiar. And so I'm trying to figure out who this actress is. And so as a result, I continue watching this trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends up being pretty funny. And so I ended up watching the entire trailer. And when this comes out on Hulu, I think I'm going to watch it. I don't know if it's a movie or TV show. I think it's a TV show. But it's set in Russia. And it's the story of Catherine the Great.
Mm-hmm.
And how she became Catherine the Great. And
can I add a little clarity? Because I did sort of look into this. It's a mini series that's made for Hulu.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Very good. I'm glad. I'm glad someone does research for this.
No, that's okay. It's going to premiere May 15th too. So 2 weeks.
Very good. So it's basically the story of her becoming the Empress of Russia. Mm-hmm. And how that started when she was with her husband, Peter. And, like, he seems like a total dumbass.
Mm-hmm.
Based on this trailer. I'm not very familiar with Russian history, so I don't know the intricacies of this. But, man, it looks really funny. And just as a result of that, I'm going to watch it. And maybe I'll learn something about Russian history a little bit. I don't know. It does not take itself seriously. In fact, in the trailer, it even says like something about based on the true story, kind of.
Right.
So I like that. Yes, for sure. So we'll see. But I just wanted to put this out on the radar in case someone wants something different to watch. Because I don't think there's any shows like this on TV right now.
Or if somebody like myself is in love with Elle Fanning.
That's who it is.
Yes,
that's who it is.
Good.
She's great. She's better than her sister.
Oh, for sure.
Yes. Sorry, Dakota. But yeah, The Great. Looking forward to it. What'd you think about the trailer?
Oh, I thought it was hilarious, and I do not like Downton Abbey type stuff. But it gave me enough that I definitely want to check it out.
Yes. The other trailer was Snowpiercer, based on the, who's in that? What's his name?
Captain America.
Yeah. Something Evans.
Chris Evans.
Chris Evans. I almost said Luke Evans, but then I caught myself.
Shame on you.
Chris Evans, based on, I think it's a Korean manga.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. It's based on a book. Snowpiercer. Reagan is very excited for this TV show. Because Reagan and I loved the Snowpiercer movie.
Nice.
She was very giddy when this trailer came out. She hadn't seen it. And I was like, hey, Reagan. She's like, what? I said, Snowpiercer trailer's out. She's like, that came out like 10 years ago. I said, yes, they're doing a TV show. She said, what? Mind blown. She would stop what she was doing and watch the trailer.
Yeah, isn't this going to be on like TNT? Yeah, that stinks for me, but good for everyone else.
TNT, but I think that means it's going to be on HBO Max.
That stinks for me, but not everyone else.
Are you not getting HBO Max?
No, I don't get HBO Max. Stop the madness.
What is wrong? You can't watch Westworld without it.
Stop the madness.
Nick, HBO has so many good documentaries.
But they did, back to Snowpiercer, they upgraded the main character from Captain America, thank God, to America's sweetheart.
Yes. Well, she doesn't play his character.
I know, but she's the main star is my point.
She is the star. My childhood crush, Jennifer Connelly. Mm-hmm. Also my adulthood crush. America's sweetheart, Jennifer Connelly. Man, she looks good.
Yeah.
How old is Jennifer Connelly? Let's look this up.
And the other gentleman who's in the series, David Diggs, I met him in Austin, God, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And he was talking about this TV show.
Oh, no kidding.
Just hoping that it gets off the ground. So.
Man, Jennifer Connelly is 50.
Man, that's a good looking 50.
That's a great looking 50.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, yeah, what's his name plays, Chris Evans's character?
Who?
Diggs.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Looks good. Who's the other one? Anyway, it doesn't matter. She looks familiar too. She plays the crazy lady that throws the guy's arm out the window. But I'm excited to see how they do this as a TV show. Cause the thing about, Snowpiercer, it's, you know, it's a 2-hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only so much you can dive into as to like how we got here and how to get to the front of the train. So I think doing it as a series could be interesting. I don't know how they would do a second season.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But we'll see. I'm excited for at least one season of Snowpiercer. I think it looks way better than the movie.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
I'm glad your daughter's excited for it.
And Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah.
You know, my wife and I were talking about her yesterday because I was telling her to watch Tales from the Loop, and I started going explaining the episode that I watched to her. Mm-hmm. She's like, that sounds too fantasy for me. And I'm like, your favorite movie of all time is The Labyrinth, and this sounds too fantasy for you?
Well, but, she wants some Henson puppets. That's what
well,
she
wants. My wife used to have a big crush on, what's his name?
David Bowie.
When she was growing up. And I was like, the only reason I watched Labyrinth is because I had a huge crush on Jennifer Connelly. So there you go. But yes.
Good Jennifer stuff. Connelly. Good stuff.
So yes.
Now, will David Diggs break out a little Thomas Jefferson Hamilton during Snowpiercer? And will you turn off the TV as soon as that happens?
Listen, if Snowpiercer is a musical, it's over. I will not watch it. That's all I'm going to say. I doubt it's a musical. Unless they start singing in the back of the train, that's possible.
You never know.
Never know.
Does have a good voice.
That's all I got.
Well, that's plenty. We're bumping up next to 3 hours, huh?
Man, what is this, the Geek Brunch podcast?
Well, never. How dare you? We can never live up to that. Are you kidding me?
No, we'd have to take the whole weekend off and just record. And I don't think we'd do 6 hours in one sitting either.
We could never do it justice. Just stop. No,
we could never do that. I do appreciate the Geek Brunch podcast, though, because I've been running out of podcasts lately. I don't understand this. Oh. I subscribe to like 69 or 70 podcasts.
Do you subscribe to the Oh Hello podcast?
What is that?
It's based on the characters from Oh Hello, the Broadway show.
Now, why the hell would I do that?
Aren't you a fan of Nick Kroll and John Mulaney?
I like John Mulaney.
Yeah.
I don't like musicals.
It isn't. Did I say it was a musical? Just, are you inferring that everything on Broadway is a musical, good sir?
Yes. Yes.
How dare you? Arthur Miller put Death of a Salesman on Broadway.
Yes, that was good.
Yeah, it's the two characters from their Broadway show, Oh Hello, doing a podcast because everyone is sheltered indoors at this point. But their podcast is about the death of Princess Diana. And I'm on episode 6, and it has nothing to do with Princess Diana. The best thing about the podcast is in between, like, as they'll have on, like, John Oliver to be talking about it. And, of course, accusing him of killing Princess Diana because he's, you know, from Europe. And right when John Oliver starts going off on, like, a tangent, not even a tangent, like about where he was during the murder, you know, the death of Princess Diana, they'll fade out his audio and do a and they do this throughout, and this is why it's my favorite part of the Oh Hello podcast. They'll do a commercial, and it will be like one of them was Subway sandwiches, the only place that you can get sweaty meat. like that's their line read for like Subway sandwich. It's just so insane where they take the pot, but they've done it to like they had like a psychic on trying to talk to the spirit of Diana. It was just so stupid. Oh my god, just completely like not factual. That like there is just not. And Ira Glass, they went to him to produce it since he does all of the like, you know, big, like murder mystery type podcasts.
Sure.
And he was just like, I don't even understand what you guys are trying to do. I have no idea where this is going. It is just so stupid. But hey, if you like Nick Kroll and John Mulaney,
all right.
Check out their, well, first you should check out their Broadway show was filmed and it's on Netflix right now. So you should check that out.
Oh, interesting.
But if you want more of that of those characters, then check out the podcast.
But it's not a musical.
Oh, God, there's no music in it other than their love for Steely Dan, which is completely insane.
Oh, boy.
But they're just two old dudes that it's just they never break character. They're just insane. So
you said this is on Netflix?
Yeah. Oh, hello. Look it up.
All right, I'm looking this up right now. Oh, dang you, Netflix and your autoplay. All right. Oh, hello. There it is.
But look at the outfits and look at the makeup. Holy Christ. But yeah, that it was a bit. They won umpteen Netflix awards, umpteen Emmy, not Emmys, whatever Broadway gives out.
Tonys.
Tonys. Yeah, and they did it for like a year and a half.
All right, I'm going to check out. I put the show on my queue, and I put this podcast on my queue.
There you go.
We shall see.
But I recommend watching the show first before listening to the podcast.
Gotcha. Very good. Oh, hello.
And besides, the podcast episodes are only like 16 minutes long. They're very short.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I run out of podcasts, so I appreciate a good 5 or 6 hour podcast.
I know. Thank God. Thank God for Michael Myers and his network.
No kidding. What's comics gonna do now though? I hear he's gonna be lowering his intake.
Don't say that. Well, don't forget the last time he did that, you know, 3 weeks later he had to go back and rebuy all that stuff.
That's true.
Yeah. He'll get reeled back in. Let's hope.
The latest Geek Brunch was only 4 hours and 36 minutes. Shame on you guys.
Oh my gosh. They must have are they on summer hours now?
Is yeah, that came out today. Shameful.
Yeah. Dang it. We can't live up to that. It's a high quality standard. That's a high bar. Not just the running time, the quality. We can't do that.
That's true.
We're like a food truck on fire. Everyone knows that.
Maybe on episode 250. Who knows?
It'll go long. Oh, that's without a doubt. That'll be a long ass one.
But I might not be saying anything.
Is the quality going to be there like it
true.
Is?
That's true.
I don't know.
We shall see. All right. Very good. So we're going to wrap this up here at 2:51. Thank you for listening to The Nerdy Legion with Nick and Martin. You can, of course, find Nick at Nick Wetmore. That's his name. He's on the Twitter machine. I'm at Geekvine. That's not my name, but I'm also on the Twitter machine. You can email us, hello@nerdlegion.com. Nick, I don't know if you know this, but we are the number 115 most popular podcast in Germany right now.
150, I'm sorry, you cut out. 115 most popular crochet podcast in Germany? Is that what you said?
No, podcast.
I'm going to have to reevaluate those numbers because I don't believe them.
We were number 116 last week. We're 115 this week. So to all our German listeners, Gesundheit.
Yeah. If you could just get one more person to listen to the podcast, we might break 110.
Yes. My German is rusty, so I will not say anything in German.
As a linguist, I'll expect you to learn some more German phrasing down the road.
Listen, I took 5 years of German just so I can get this podcast to be in the top 100 podcasts in Germany, and I can't even do that.
Dang it.
So I need all our German listeners to tell a friend so we can break the 100 mark. And when we do, I don't care if you quit listening.
Don't get your Lederhosen in a bunch. Just convince somebody to listen to it, or not even listen to it. Just download it. Give us 5 stars. That's all we need.
Download it twice.
Right.
Give us 6 stars.
That's okay. Just do that.
If you do that, if we can get this podcast in the top 100 in Germany, I will personally write Meghan Markle an email, and I will convince her to reinstate Oktoberfest this year. She canceled it. I don't know if you know this. It's very sad.
You know what would be easy? For them to steal their mother and father's phone, go into the podcast area, and just hit that little plus button. Just subscribe to it for them. They'll never even know. It'll just be downloaded every week. They won't know.
That's true.
We could break 100 only in Germany, guys.
Only in Germany. Okay. Until somebody else steps up.
Yes.
Germany is our favorite country right now.
SOS the rope. Don't you know some Germans that you can get them to download our pod? Come on.
Get with the program.
I like all this. I mean, you were all set. You were wrapping this show up. You can find me on the Twitter machine. Blah, and then you just jumped on a tangent. I love it.
That's how this show works.
It does work that way.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
With that said,
soon to be 100 in Germany. Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen.